I'm in a New York state of mind. Just you up in my love, all over your body. Hey now, don't dream it's over. Let's have a kiki. We're gonna serve and work and turn.
All right, welcome to episode 70 of Hypeable's Glee Chat podcast. I am your host, John Thrasher, and joining me tonight, we'll start off with Natalie. Hey, Natalie.
Hey, Natalie. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I've just been crazily rereading all of the Hunger Games books and rewatching the movie because I haven't seen Catching Fire yet and I want to go see it.
Okay, we'll come back to Catching Fire in a minute after I introduce everybody because I want to talk about it. Also okay. On the show, perfect segue. Hey, Mitch. Get it?
Oh, get hey, it? Katniss. Never heard that one before on Glee Chat, huh?
I know. Mitch is joining us. Mitch, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Came back from a little Thanksgiving trip to New York. Got some snow. I was looking forward to that. Not really.
Did you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we didn't get any snow. I was in Maryland for Thanksgiving. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mitch, you've been kind of busy, and we've all been really busy, by the way. So sorry for those of you who are listening. We haven't been able to find a time that worked with everybody. And last week when we tried to record, my audio was just not having it. So we had to push this recording back a little bit. And we're going to be doing a double episode tonight where we rehash Moving Out and Puppet Master. But also joining us tonight is a very special guest, Miss Caitlin. Hey, Caitlin.
Hi, John.
Welcome to the show. This is your first appearance on Glee Chat.
It is. I'm happy to be here.
Now, you originally started as a Glee Chat fan, right?
I did before I worked at Hypeable. I was
really?
Listening to Glee Chat. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it's so funny because I have this app called Time Hop, and you can sort of connect. Yeah, you can connect all your social media to it, and then every day you get a notification, and you can see what you were tweeting, you know, up to however long ago you've had your social media accounts. For me, it's like 6 years on Facebook. And I was just noticing recently, I was like, oh my gosh, here are some old tweets between me and Caitlin before she started working at Hypeable.
Shut up.
I thought that was like, yeah, I thought that was really cool. She went from like super fan to super awesome Hypeable writer. So fantastic. Thanks for joining.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Now, you're also, I'm so sorry I don't even know this, but you're on another podcast, right?
Yes.
Like, what is the situation with that? I'm so sorry for not knowing.
I am on the Rewatchable podcast with Mitch.
Right. That's right. And that's how you guys made the connection. I just wasn't sure. The thing is, like, 99% of people that write for Hypeable are also on one or more podcasts. So, you know, it was just destined that you would be on Glee Chat eventually anyway.
Glad we finally got that worked out.
Yes, exactly. What's up?
I was just going to say, were you just on Rewatchable for Veronica Mars, or were you on Firefly as well?
I was on Firefly as well.
Cool.
There you go. So before we get into Glee Chat stuff, I want to talk about Catching Fire because, Natalie, you just mentioned it. I did this. Okay, so here's my situation. I read the first book and then saw the movie. And I was like 6 chapters into Catching Fire, and I was like, I really want to read this book before I go see the movie. But then I was like, but what if it's like, what if I go see the movie first? Like, I wonder what that experience would be like, because for all of the Potter films, you know, I had obviously read the books before I had seen the movies. So I was like, I'm going to go see Catching Fire and then read the book. I want to go into Catching Fire like completely unaware. I am so, so, so glad that I did, because I was on the edge of my seat the entire time.
Sure.
I was so excited to like sit there as a fan and be like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Why are they running like that? Why is there blood in his mouth? Like all this different stuff. And I eventually, like, you know, I was just telling one of my friends, like, that went with me, I was like, yeah, I got settled in and, like, sat back in my chair to see what was about to happen with Katniss, and then the movie ended. And I was like, what? That's the end of the movie? What? No.
I was so excited. How come you didn't feel like that was the end? It was 2.5 hours long, and it was long.
Well, Okay, but for me, it didn't feel that long.
Yeah, because you didn't know it was coming up. I get that. But did you feel like the arena was like part two of all three parts of the movie? Because that's what I would have felt like if I was watching it for the first time.
I thought that the arena scenes should have been a little bit longer. I was like, this all wrapped up in
that's
like,
how quick it went.
Well, with the books, I was always of the opinion when I heard they were going to split Mockingjay, the last, I was like, why? Everything in Mockingjay happens really quickly. They should split Catching Fire between, like, the tour and them finding out they're going back into the arena.
Right.
And then the arena, it should, the Catching Fire, in my opinion, is the one that should have been two movies.
Oh, yeah. That's a popular opinion, Natalie. Everyone agrees.
I don't like fandom for Hunger Games, but that was all. I thought they should have gone Hunger Games one movie, Catching Fire two, and then Mockingjay one. If they needed to do two movies for one of them, if they
couldn't. Well, either way,
olden days.
Yeah, exactly. I absolutely loved it, and I hope that if you guys are listening and haven't seen it yet, you'll go see it. Caitlin, are you a Hunger Games fan?
I am. I saw the movie the day it came out, and it was phenomenal.
I don't want to spoil it, but the last scene, like what ultimately happens to in the arena at the very end, you know, what happens with Katniss and everything. I was, like, not expecting that, and it was the coolest thing in the world. Okay, this isn't Hunger Games chat, so let's move on maybe a little bit.
I don't know if chat still happened. I can't remember another episode coming up for that.
It's now an archived podcast, which you can check out on Hypeable.com. Natalie, what were you going to say?
I just want to ask everyone their opinions of how... Well, I mean, John, you hadn't read it, but just your opinion in general of how they did Finnick, because he's my favorite character in the series, and I was very, very concerned about his casting when he was cast, and I am curious as to whether you think it worked.
Well, I remember the days and months leading up to that casting choice. A lot of people thought Grant Gustin should have been that character.
Well, no, he wanted it. He just really wanted it. He's nothing
that's right.
Like
he did.
He
yeah,
just
yeah,
really
yeah.
wanted it.
Hey, yeah. Grant Gustin, Caitlin, you and I were just talking about how Grant Gustin's getting his own pilot for The Flash.
He will be on Arrow this week.
Not a pilot. It's Arrow. He's going to be young Flash on Arrow.
But the Flash is getting a pilot of its own.
What?
Yeah. They were originally going to do a backdoor pilot in episode 20 of this season. But when the powers that be at the CW saw episodes 8 and 9, which were his origin story, they were like, this is crazy good. You're getting your standalone pilot.
Oh my God. Go
look at our little warbler.
He's such a good guy. Like, he's such a good dude. And he's a good actor, and I think Sebastian was a really wasted character. So go here.
You act like he's not going to come around anymore. We might see more Sebastian. What's wrong with
him? We will not see more Sebastian if he's owned by the CW now.
I was just going to say that. Here's a fun story about Grant Gustin. I randomly follow his brother on Instagram. I don't know. I don't want to talk about it.
I think it sounded really sordid. Like, it was just a love affair. I can't remember anymore.
It's a little bit awkward, but I follow him on Instagram, and he was at this bar in my neighborhood called Harlem Public, and it's a very popular bar in Harlem. Like, a lot of young people go there or whatever, and I was like, I wrote to him, and I was like, oh my God, that's like right up the street from me. And he was like, oh, that's right up the street from me. I live around here. And I was like, wait, what? You live in my neighborhood? I've been following you for like 2 years on Instagram and had no idea. That's so unrelated to this podcast. It's unbelievable. So let's
Sebastian
actually
is super duper.
Yeah, I guess it's a little bit connected.
The thing is,
Finnick. Yeah.
Finnick.
I liked him. I was kind of iffy on Sam Claflin because I had no idea who he was, but I liked him.
Yeah. Just to bring this back to Glee, actually, when I read the books the first time and Finnick's kind of, you know, sleazy attitude, and then his attitude, and then his kind of, like, the vulnerability sort of he has that you end up learning about. My mental image for Finnick the whole time I was reading the books was very similar to Jonathan Groff, like, as Jesse in Glee. Like, that is kind of, that's exactly how I... how I always saw Finnick. So, yeah, that's... like, maybe not exactly looks, but he was very similar to Jesse for me. So
whenever I was watching the movie, I was remembering how there was a lot of like conversation about this character Finnick. But from my standpoint, now remember, I hadn't read the second book at all yet. I was kind of like let down from his character only because it seemed like there was so much hype around it. And then, you know, his character was interesting and I really did like his character, but I didn't think it was like super anything special. I don't know. I don't want to like have a bunch of hate mail about it. However, Joanna was everything to me and I live for that character. She was hilarious and amazing. Totally. Loved her. And I also love Jenna Malone, so that was exciting to see her.
Oh, I loved when she added in her own F-bombs for fun. Yeah. She was just like, I feel like Joanna would be more pissed off at this moment. Can I do that? And director Francis Lawrence was just like, yeah, you'll do it.
Jenna Malone, I don't hate her. I just hate every character she's ever played because they're all bitches.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Oh, come on, like, Sucker Punch? She was so cool.
I have not seen Sucker Punch, but I think I'm holding ongoing resentment from Stepmom.
I knew you were going to say
that character. Yeah, Stepmom, I want to hit around the head for about 7 days, and I've just hated Jenna Malone ever since, and I feel really bad. Oh, not her. Actually, Saved, if you've seen Saved with Mandy Moore, and Jenna Malone is, like, one of my favorite movies. It's amazing. She plays bitches, and it just makes me hate her, but it's not her fault.
It's because of her high voice.
It's just that she plays horrible, horrible characters. But yeah. I'm keen to see her in Catching Fire as well, yes.
She's flawless.
Oh, she is.
Catching Fire, she's so good.
She's Jennifer Lawrence's Katniss to Joanna, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, all right. I think that's right. Well, okay, let's get into some Glee.
Back to that later. Yeah, let's talk about Glee.
Yeah, so tonight we're going to be rehashing episode, what is it, 7, Moving Out, and 8, Puppet Master. I think that's right.
6 and 7.
Sorry, I'm a terrible person. We're going to get through some of these, and I'm fired off the podcast. Oh, by the way, speaking of fired, Roxanne is still a part of our show. She has just been super busy, you guys, and I'm going to have her like make a statement and maybe add it to the end of this podcast. So, just so you guys can hear her beautiful voice again sometime soon. Okay, so let's start rehashing Moving Out. Hopefully you guys remember this. And, oh, by the way, I hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving. I did. We got caught up in our Catching Fire talk. Natalie, you don't celebrate Thanksgiving, I'm guessing.
We don't give thanks in Australia, no.
Well, give thanks for murder, you mean?
Yeah, you guys aren't very thankful down under.
Because that's where the holiday tradition comes from, that we pilgrims sat down with the Native Americans and had a grand old dinner.
Yeah, Canada has Thanksgiving, don't they? Like a different kind of Canada. Thanksgiving.
I guess it kind of relates, because, you know, a lot of pilgrims did go up to Canada.
But, I mean, like, Canada...
It totally makes sense to me that, like, Australia wouldn't care that... We were giving thanks to people who we murdered.
We definitely don't celebrate your holiday of Thanksgiving. We don't have a similar holiday. We have Australia Day, which is like your 4th of July.
It's like 4th of July.
That's more like settlement of Australia or whatever.
But there you go.
But you know the basis. It's like, you know, you have a turkey and you sit around and bicker with your family.
We don't even have a turkey at Christmas. It's the middle of summer. No one wants to roast a
That'd be hot in the kitchen. And basically, you just go shopping as soon as you're done with dinner now.
That's getting a bit crazy.
Yeah.
I swear my whole... Like, we know so much about American culture in Australia, and I swear it hasn't always been as bad as it has become in the past... I don't know, like...
It's gotten worse.
Or
no
10
one
years or whatever. We have, Boxing Day sales. Boxing Day is, like, in the UK and in Australia the day after Christmas. We have Boxing Day sales, which are a bit crazy. And we have midnight shopping, like, leading up to Christmas. Like, that the stores stay open until midnight in order to do, like, Christmas shopping. And then the big sales on Boxing Day on New Year's Day. But they're not like you guys. Like, people don't camp out and, like, kill each other. It's not like...
Camp out and kill each other. That's all it is. I love that. It's great. Because, I mean, in a nutshell, that's what I would see in the news if I didn't live in America. Because, my God, it's insane.
Right, yeah. All right, let's rehash Moving Out. So the very... I don't know. There was no segue into that. So
you were looking for it. Right
into it. Yeah, I was fishing for it, didn't find it. So we find out there's a career fair happening at McKinley. Billy Joel ignored the haters and pursued a career in the arts. This is all happening in the choir room as Mr. Shu is sort of explaining to everybody. We also find out that Blaine and Sam are going to be going to New York City because Blaine is auditioning for NIADA, and Sam has something set up at Hunter College. They sing the song Moving Out, and I thought this was a good song. I'm a big Billy Joel fan, and I apologize for Jack, because Jack really wanted to be on this episode, as he's a pretty big Billy Joel fan, but we just couldn't find the time to get him on here. So, Jack, if you're listening, hopefully we live up to your expectations about Billy Joel. But, Natalie, what are your thoughts about Moving Out, the performance?
Oh, I don't know. They sung themselves to Wade in New York, and they sung themselves to New York, and that was kind of nice or whatever. It was it was a good performance. Like, I like them singing together. I like them singing the song. I find here's things like this that I find hilarious. I find hilarious that Schuster walks into the class and announces, this is going to be the lesson. And what happens when he's like, but Blaine and Sam have prepared something earlier. I then end up, like, picturing him, like, calling them into his office and, like, you know, like, how that is all, like, did they have, like, a psychic connection that means they go over and they have to do that? So I find that hilarious. I also found it weird that Blaine has to go to New York to audition for Nyada when, like, Kurt and Rachel got to do auditions, like, at school, and that
Carmen Thibodeau came up, too.
They came around. And that's common. Like, if you don't, like, live in the city the school is, like, sometimes you can, those local places to audition, like, maybe not like your school specifically, but like districts where
Carmen's,
you know,
just exhausted. Carmen's had a rough year.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, Kurt is her student now. She's had a rough year.
But, oh my god.
I found it a little bit convoluted that they are just, you know, shoehorning them into New York, but that was kind of addressed in the next episode, which I appreciated, the fact that they're like back and forth to New York so much. The song itself I really liked.
Yeah, it was a good song. And for the sake of time, because we do have two episodes to rehash tonight, we'll move on a little bit here. Jake is trying to get Marley back, we find out in this episode, which I think we all kind of expected, right? Mitch, did you kind of expect that this would be happening with Jake?
Yeah, because he's very flat to me. I don't think he's really going to surprise me in any way that I didn't really see coming. It's unfortunate. I don't know what more there is to say about it, and it saddens me because I know, Natalie, you're a big fan of his brother. Are you feeling that he's flat, too, and disappointing you and not living up to his brother's greatness?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a few things about Jake I really like. Like, kind of some aspects of his attitude. Like, he's very chill, and I like some things about him. But I feel like his mistakes that he's making are really forced. Like, that they're trying to make this really... doesn't come across that naturally, and I also don't know why he's so hung up on Marley and why she's so, because I'm still stuck, and then just like skipping ahead a tiny bit, when it ended up happening with Ryder, I also was like, this is stupid, because he got annoying, whereas in the beginning, Ryder was awesome to Marley, Marley liked him, and then she only went out with Jake to sort of piss off Ryder when...
Oh yeah, that's right.
You know, when she was trying to be a bad girl, and it's like, did you guys just, like, force this relationship? Do you not remember that you actually liked him and that you just went out with Jake to, like, annoy him? So it's I don't know, it's all a bit forced and weird to me.
I have two comments about Jake that I will save for the next, you know, for when we talk about Puppet Master, because I think his character has grown a lot in the last couple episodes, and I'll mention that when we get there. Caitlin, what are your thoughts about Jake and Marley?
Honestly, I mean, I'm not surprised he's making the effort. He wants the second chance. I feel, like, just very sad for him, because everyone's telling him who he is. He is this horrible person who cheats on people. So he's fulfilling that, becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, basically.
Yeah.
And it makes me very sad for him.
I agree with that. Like, the stuff that happens later, it's like, you can tell, like, you know, when Ryder's talking to him, when Marley's talking to him, you can tell that he doesn't feel like that. Like, and but he's like, fine, if that's what you say I am, then that's what I'm going to be, kind of thing.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
That becomes quite evident, and that was good. Like, that was well done, I thought.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. We find out that NYU and Columbia are just Blaine's fallback schools, which I thought was absolutely hilarious. I don't know anybody who would use NYU or Columbia to be their backup
Blaine's
school.
Arrogance is delusional.
It's beyond
and I think
anything.
We're going to go into this much more soon.
Yeah, that's a good
point.
He
is like living in a little dream world. I mean, he is a great student and all of that, but he's just, his presumptuousness is just incredible. I love it.
Yeah. Kurt introduces Blaine on the piano at the diner he works at, and Blaine sings Piano Man. And I really love this performance. I love Darren Criss on a piano singing Billy Joel. I mean, that was a great matchup on Glee's part.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts, Natalie?
Well, I kind of put this in the recap because I loved it as well. I really, really did. And it's a song that Darren used to play when he used to play at restaurants, like, as an entertainer. So I've actually heard, like, really old bootlegs of him, like, singing this. But here's something that happened that I have no idea was on purpose or not. It wasn't that good. Like, it was good. It was very, very, very good for the kind of music that I like a raw kind of rock singer style thing. It wasn't good in terms of, like, when they're like, let's warm up for Nyada, and then Kurt's at the end like, you're going to get into Nyada for sure. It absolutely showed off everything about Darren's voice that is not Broadway, if you know what I mean. Like, showed that he doesn't have good breath control. He doesn't have good projection. He has, like, a raspier, when he really tries to, like, boom out notes, it's kind of a raspier, more rock-style voice, not like a musical theatre voice, which is something that he knows himself and is spoken about in interviews all the time when people are like, Broadway, Broadway, whoop. He's like, I like Broadway, but I'm not really that kind of singer. And and this performance, like, it was breathy, it was really raw, and it was the kind of awesome thing that you'd love to see at, like, a piano bar. But it made me wonder if it was on purpose, and that he's not going to get into Nyada because it's not his style of music.
This brings up a really great question that we've never really talked about on Glee Chat before is, you know, in his performance, maybe he's meant to be doing, you know, one thing or another. But how do they sort of translate that into a final studio version that's sellable on iTunes, you know? Like, if Darren's cue or his note for this performance is to maybe not be as great, you know, is that okay? Because it's going to be sold on iTunes, and as an artist, you know, I don't know that he necessarily wants to be represented as that.
Well, I think that
Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I do. I think that when they do purposely bad performances, like, you know, Rachel being sick and trying to sing that The Climb,
right?
That's like a joke performance. They don't put that on iTunes. With this, I don't think it was bad. I think that they probably put it up as it was recorded. It's just not. It just showed off everything about his voice that means that he's not going to be a Broadway performer. If you know what I mean, it showed off that he's the kind of a rock singer style, like a pop singer, that he can do like that kind of performance, that he's not booming out eloquently with like perfect breath control and all the way that Kurt and Rachel can. And I think it sounded great for a certain style of music, but it's just not the Nyada music, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious as to whether that's on purpose or whether we were meant to think that that's actually good for Nyada, like, because it's not.
Yeah, because it's not.
Anyway.
In the next scene, Artie tries to help Becky with colleges, but Sue interrupts and says no. Becky admits that she doesn't want to go to college and tells Artie to butt out. We'll explore that scenario a little bit more as we rehash this episode. In the next scene, Ryder confronts Jake about his situation with Marley. Jake says to get used to the real him or leave him the hell alone. He sings the Billy Joel song My Life as he flips around the choir room. And this was the first time that it sort of hit me that I was wondering if they are secretly, the writers, trying to get Marley and Ryder together because they are actually a couple in real life. Similar.
Where have I been?
Yeah. Yeah, they're engaged, actually.
Shut the front door.
They
were going out before the Glee project?
Not before the Glee project, no. After they started working on the show.
Right, yeah.
Oh, but that's been a good year and a half.
Yeah. And so I just was curious, you know, I'm thinking, oh, maybe they saw what worked really well with Leah and Corey and sort of, you know, New Directions 2.0, now that they're together in real life, could the chemistry be translated on screen? And I don't know, just something I was thinking about as this whole scene happened. But
it definitely vibed. Like, it was definitely like, oh yeah, they're gonna start putting it together. It was like definitely on purpose.
Yeah, and also, you know what? They're still sophomores. We can't forget that they still have not gotten through that year, which they finally lampshaded in the previously on Glee.
They did.
Because the guy goes,
longest year ever.
Yeah, longest year ever. Oh, that was a good American accent. I like that. I'm glad they finally mentioned that. And
yeah.
Oh, John, it's not on our news, but I think this is as good as a point as any to bring it up, that the Christmas thing is still happening. Did we talk about that yet?
Well, the Christmas episode...
Yeah, well,
episode...
it's going to be the next episode after the end of after this, so yeah.
Oh, after, yeah, so that's coming up, like... So that's like coming up, and that makes sense now. Are we all okay with that, or do you want to talk about that later, John?
Yeah, let's talk about that later. Let's talk about this episode, and we'll move into that that stuff in a bit. But yeah. Caitlin, what were your thoughts about the My Life performance? Did you like it? Was it in? Were you into it?
The first time I watched the episode, I was just, I don't care about the story, so I was just kind of halfway paying attention. I didn't care. But then after watching Puppet Master, and then I went back and rewatched this, and I just had it just is making me feel sad for Jake, because everyone is telling him who he is, and he's just letting that define him. And that just came across in this number, and it just made me very sad for him.
Yeah,
I have more thoughts about that, too, for the next episode that we'll rehash. But go ahead, Natalie.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, it's totally defiant. It's totally like, it's totally like after Jake talks to him and after Marley talks to him, it's totally like, right, if this is what you say, then fine. If that's all people think I can be, why am I even bothering to do anything? It's kind of,
Yeah. So we'll revisit that as well in the rest as we rehash. In the next scene, Sam meets with someone at Hunter College about getting in. Oh. He basically has an interview with the admissions counselor. He bombs his interview like I've never seen anyone bomb an interview.
I'm not exaggerating. I had my hands over my face. I could sort of see it. And just that pause, like he's like, so you're black. And I was just like, oh, no, I know. I know what's going to happen. Oh, my God, you need to stop.
I was really surprised that they kind of, like, went there because, you know, Glee pushes it to the limit. But I thought, I don't know if you should paint him as sort of this misunderstood racist person. But
it's,
whatever.
Yeah, I 100% don't think it was meant to be racist.
No,
I mean?
For
like,
sure.
From
but
him.
People would
it's
interpret
meant to be
it.
Him being an idiot.
Right.
But he's not an idiot. That's the thing. That's what annoyed me so badly when he was introduced in the first place in season two, and his kind of like the relationship he started having with Kurt and with Finn, like as friends, and the way he was painted compared to Finn and Puck, especially, he was meant to be very aware and very good with people, as opposed to them being like, he did not have the prejudices they had, the inbuilt prejudices. And whether he's a little bit dumb and doesn't know what's appropriate, you know, that's on one hand. But because they say straight up that he was dyslexic, which got neglected and then given to Ryder,
I don't even know.
But now they're just making him like completely oblivious and stupid, whereas he started out as the one, as the dude in the show that was really good at people. And that kind of annoys me.
Yeah. Sam tells Rachel that he doesn't want to go to college at all and that he'd much rather be a male model. Rachel says, fine, that's great. Let's do a photo shoot. And we'll get to that whole situation in a second because there's a lot to talk about. In the next scene, Artie sings Honesty to Becky, another great Billy Joel song. Sue confronts Artie again with an ear douche and... you know, basically says to leave her alone, but she finally surrenders to his efforts and asks that he bring back a full report from the campus he's going to research with Becky. And, I don't know. It's interesting. It's like, I guess if Artie was going to have a storyline this season, it should focus around that, but I feel like we're not getting a lot of Artie this season, and I kind of miss him. Mitch, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd have to agree that we're not getting a lot of him, but I think that there's a really interesting perspective with Artie, if you look back at his season 4 presence, because oddly enough, I was talking to a friend who also watches Glee, and they were catching up, and they were still just in season 4, and they knew that I was on Glee Chat, so they'd go to me for all their Glee news, and they said, hey, you know what, I've noticed that Artie and Kitty get a lot of time together. I'm like, shut up, I've noticed that.
It was absolutely foreshadowed in season 4, like, or that they were like, oh, those people have good unexpected chemistry, let's make that a thing. It was either purposeful foreshadowing or that they did the relationship because they noticed how well they, like, could make them work, if you know what I mean.
Right, exactly.
But
I definitely noticed it in season 4.
Well, the perspective I wanted to throw out there was that we had, you know, like a foreshadowing of something interesting for Artie for season 5. But now that we've reached season 5, he's reached that goal. He's dating Kitty. What next? He doesn't really have anything going on. He's already set to go to New York. We've had his mom tell him, go off and do that. Like, his drama's done. So it's like Artie's just sticking around because he was one of the originals. And he's not to the level of Tina yet, but he just is there because he has to be.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many lead, you know, people in this show that, like, not every episode can, like, focus around, like, an ongoing plot for every person. Like, it is a group of people at school, and some of them are just living their lives at school until they graduate, and they have to have them there for numbers, you know, because they still don't have a full Glee Club for Nationals, by the way. Just saying.
Do they mention that? I feel like they mentioned that, and they're going to do something with Cheerios? Am I making that up? Is that still an issue that's still not addressed?
They have not, I mean, they have not mentioned it in a long while that they don't have enough numbers for Nationals, so whatever.
I think they're bringing puppets.
Yeah, they're just going to bring puppets. Yeah. Or we'll have Rory, Joe, Sugar.
They've been there. They were just sick.
If they really brought them back, guys, I wouldn't know what to do. I would just, that's rage quit. That's desk flip. That's everything.
I would drop the mic and walk out.
That's a Beyonce moment, but in the bad way. Like,
Right. I would just probably give up this whole podcast. Just kidding. Love you guys.
John, remember the article you wrote that was, I remember just, like, missing Glee characters, and it had Rory's face crossed out and Damon McGinty's face crossed out. Like, where is he? Missing. MIA.
When I was doing the Glee recaps last season, I seriously considered doing, like, a tally at the bottom of the episode, being, like, each episode of being, like, which characters appeared.
Please,
like,
Natalie, start doing
these
that.
These people were absent this week because Glee didn't feel like paying them. And these people next week, but he didn't feel like paying them. I did not do that.
Bookmark for our next episode. We're about to recap because there's a very important person missing later, and when they needed to be there. And I just needed all of us to, like, sit there and, like, recognize that Glebe's doing that outside of the choir room too when it didn't need to. Okay, so bookmarked.
Okay, you're bookmarked.
Okay, noted.
Okay, yes. In the next scene, Sam finally has his photo shoot with Rachel, which was extremely awesome. I was obsessed with his photo shoot, mainly because of his abs. And by the way, I have no shame on this podcast anymore. I am being completely open, and I don't care what anyone thinks about it.
I think Oakland Booty turned us.
What's that?
The Oakland Booty episode definitely turned us.
Right. Oh, absolutely. It's a whole different John happening right now.
A whole new John.
You're too muscly for me, so you can keep the abs.
But... yeah, I know what you're saying. I'm not into, like, the, like, crazy abs, but they're just fun to look at.
There's just
something
about there's something about Cordova Street's abs that are so damn unique. Like, I've never seen a pair of abs that look as
a pair of abs
because it's, like, too long. I don't know, but it's just so. I want to say a really dirty word. I'm gonna say lickable. And it's like they were meant to be a sex object. That's all I can really see them being. Like, they're not like physically meant to, like, you know, lift things. Or
they've also evolved over the seasons.
They have. I'm glad that you've noticed that too.
That's what we need to make a hypeable article called "The Evolution of Cordova Street's Abs" and just, like, have like a photo gallery. No, we don't actually. Come to think of it,
like, as his hair gets longer, his abs get sexier.
Yeah, I think so. So anyway, in this scene, we notice, and I'm sure most of you who watched this episode noticed, that he and Rachel kind of had some of these small glances towards each other that were flirtatious / awkward / not really sure / confused. And, you know, it sort of begged the question, you know, what's going to happen here? Is this, like, the first step in a potential romantic situation with Rachel post-Finn? I think this is entirely too soon, as I think most of us probably on the show think, but I'm curious to hear what each of you think, and let's start with Caitlin. Did you notice this, Caitlin?
I did. I am jumping on the Samshill ship. Like,
oh, really?
Okay. Well, I think about it, whatever they're choosing to do, has to be, you know, Leah Michelle has to have approved it. Like, if she's okay with that, and could you think of anyone better for her to?
Yeah, I think you're
Jessie.
Right. Like,
the only person I would say above that is Jessie. I kind of, it is a bit soon, but if they were going to do it, I back it. The only person I would have preferred is Jessie. But
Sam's very safe. He has a lot of similarities to Finn, so he would be very safe, and they were very cute together.
Wasn't Sam staying in Finn's house for an extended period of time?
Really? Yeah, they never apparently. They never covered it, they never covered whether his dad, like, moved back to Lima or anything, like, yeah, but apparently he was, from the time that Rachel and Finn rescued him from being a male stripper onwards, he, apparently was, yeah.
Oh, no, Natalie, Sam's definitely still living in Carol's basement.
How are you so sure?
Because if we're following Glee logic, that's all we've ever known.
Yeah. That's true. But it would have been interesting to see him there in the scene where
the crying
family
scene.
Was going through Finn's stuff.
Yeah. No, I'm joking. Like, he's not there. I know he's not because he would have been there for that scene, if anything.
Well, he might be. We don't know.
Yeah.
But wouldn't that be funny if he's still... And, like, she's never mentioned it. She's just like, yeah.
But, yeah. Mitch, what are your thoughts about the Rachel
I'm
and
on board.
Sam potential?
I'm on board. The look she gave him seemed genuine. I was like, honestly, like, she's treating...
That's true.
She's treating Sam like you and I are, John. We're just like those abs. And she's just like, yeah. That's an attraction. She felt a spark, and she was like, maybe this isn't bad.
It seemed quite unexpected for her. She was just like, oh, my long-term friend. Now, that's kind of... And it might be out of a weird place. Like, some people, you know, like, after they have a loss, you know, like, get all sexy. Like, it's that happens sometimes. Like,
yeah, that's a good point.
But the vibe, I was like, oh, wow. And I was, like, surprised that I kind of liked it so much. And I remember, I do think it's a bit soon. But I don't think anything's going to happen right away, if you know what I mean. I think that thing. I think it might be like something that, you know, happens much.
Natalie's
doesn't
moving
have reason
to
go to New York that much.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was surprised how I didn't think that their chemistry would be that natural. Because they've been acting together for 4 years and we've never really seen that.
I know.
That being said, one of my favorite scenes ever in Glee is where they go to the strip club and she's kind of like holding her hand over her face and like holding up the money and he sees her and he's like, oh my god, Rachel. Like, they very rarely interact one-on-one, but every time they have, I've loved it.
Well,
so,
Natalie, here, give credence to their chemistry in that they both have the common denominator of Quinn. If you think about Quinchel shippers, who obviously have noted their amazing chemistry and, like, pretty on pretty and all of that. Sam was a very, I thought, good fit for Quinn, too. He's my OTP for Quinn. And in the end of the day, I think that that's going to be... They won't talk about it, but it'll just kind of feel right because we can see we've seen them dating Quinn or in Rachel's case, whatever with Quinn. And to me, I feel like that still works for those two. You know, it's like they're all type C personalities, we'll say, and all those C's can kind of interchange. You know, it could be Quinn Sam, it could be Rachel, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I just really feel. There's very, you know, this. I saw like a Venn diagram the other day of like all of the connections of like people dating on Glee. And
oh God! Please share that. I need to see.
Will try and find it because people have tried to do it before and it's just been a mess. But someone managed to do it really well and it's crazy. But there's lots of them that it feels like they're just shoving them together now and like you know doesn't you know what does this even mean? But Sam and Rachel, I kind of feel like it could work in the sense of like. People who've known each other for a long time who, like, come to see each other in a different way. Like, there's only so many pairings that could happen with. You know, if they tried to now be like, true. Oh, Santana and Mercedes, oh, we now love each other or something, it would just be like, what? But Sam and Rachel, I don't know, I feel like because every time the little things with them I've seen before I've really liked, I feel like it's the kind of thing where, like, friendship could take on a new light and it not be too... like forced or shoehorned, so I kind of back it. I hope it doesn't like hardcore develop like soon like my you know fiance is dead for a month and a half and I'm now
well that's what I was gonna say is that
but
I'm really surprised that you guys are all on board with it because I just didn't really feel it. Like I love Cord and Sam separately. And I don't know. I just thought it was a little bit too soon to even start thinking about that kind of a situation. But again, it was just a glance, so maybe it wasn't meant to be anything bigger.
I feel like it might be a long game, you know, like it might be like a Kitty and Artie, like all of last season, kind of giving each other a sexy wink and then...
Right.
A sexy
That's
wink.
The impression I get,
I feel like if it's a long game, I'd be okay with it, and it's not going to come out of nowhere, like at the end of the season or something like that.
Yeah. In the next scene, Ryder wants Marley to be his girlfriend. He sings the song An Innocent Man. And Jake sees the whole performance and then sort of storms off afterwards. And Blake Jenner's just such an amazing singer. I mean, this isn't like an amazing vocal song, but I thought for what it was worth, he did a really great job with it. And it was great to have him have his own song again. I really miss Blake singing like that. Caitlin, what were your thoughts?
Ugh, I hated this.
You the did?
The song itself was fine. I didn't have particular feelings about the song. Though I did think it was hilarious that he pauses in the door when he starts singing and all the New Directions that are there kind of see him and all come to attention like, oh, someone's singing. This is really important. We have to pay attention. I thought that was hilarious. But I was just like, Ryder, don't go for Marley now that she's free. Don't go there. Don't. Yeah. You went there. Why are you going there? Like.
It was inappropriate. The performance was fine, but it was so, like, it was so motzy. I don't know if I've discussed the use of the word motz on this show. I've definitely discussed it on Teen Wolf podcast. It's a word that my extended friendship group uses for, like, really bad secondhand embarrassment. Like, you're giving me the motz. Like, don't, like, I don't know. I do not know. I can't explain it, but I was just like, really? Are you really doing this? You are really naive if you think this is a good plan. And she sings so awkward and pressured. The song was fine. It was just what he was doing.
Right. Here we go. Making up for the love you've been denying you could ever feel. I'm not above doing anything to restore your faith if I can. Because they only
remember too well they heard the never ending bridge.
I was gonna say, my God.
Some people sleep all alone every night instead of taking a lover to bed. I just kinda love that line.
Yeah. Some people find that it's easier to hate than to wait
anymore. I know you don't wanna hear what I say.
Sounds so much like Corey.
Yeah, now that you say that. Alive, I'm not above
going through it again. Okay. When's the chorus?
Alright.
Wow.
Yeah, that's any bridge. It was kind of boring, but I thought he sounded really good on.
Good. It was just freaking boring.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on from An Innocent Man. Blaine says that he doesn't actually want to audition at NIADA, and Kurt realizes, because they're engaged, that Blaine is actually scared. And Natalie, what were your thoughts about this scene where they sort of had that moment? Because I thought it was a very authentic Clayne moment.
I don't know. I had really mixed feelings on it, actually. Like, I can't work out what I think. Because to me, what felt authentic was that Blaine didn't want to audition for NIADA. Like, that he right. was like, actually, to me, that felt real. Not like, I'm scared. He was like, maybe this isn't all I want. Like, maybe I'm not you, maybe. But then Kurt sort of talking him into it and being like, that seemed to be very accepted. Like, Blaine was like, oh, yeah, that's totally what it is. Thanks. Being like, oh, you're just scared. You're a performer. You need to do that. I did like that that Kurt said, like, even if you don't do NIADA, like, you'll still be a performer in some way. You'll find the limelight. I don't know if that's... But I really, like, Blaine's character, it would have felt completely authentic. I believed what they were saying. Mm-hmm. But I would love to see this come back to maybe being, like, actually, I thought that what you said was right, but actually I don't just want this. Or like him not getting in and being okay with that and going to another
I totally disagree.
I don't feel like it fits Blaine's character at all that he would want that. Like he's very arrogant and he likes attention, but he's also such a little social justice warrior that like I'm like, I don't know, it felt to me completely like, yeah, it really felt to me like Kurt was like making up a version of what he wanted and that Blaine was kind of either convinced by it or going along with it.
Caitlin, I like that you're willing to disagree. Feel free to elaborate here a little bit on what you think.
So, I think that Blaine is pretty much destined to be the performer. That's what he wants. That's how he's been set up from his introduction. He's basically, his path is paralleled to Rachel of, they are, you know, that trope that they're the ace, they're good at everything, and their story is getting the fame and then the issues that come in the personal life. Like, that's what their stories are, and they're kind of telling parallel stories with the two of them diverging a little bit, but I don't think Blaine would ever seriously want to do something else. I have always kind of pictured him as being the person who is a performer and then uses his stature to be an activist.
Potentially,
Ian Somerhalder.
But
I don't know what Ian Somerhalder does with his time, but sure.
he's always all about, like, save the children in Africa kind of deal.
Like Darren Criss.
There we go.
But Blaine has been established in the past that when he loses control, this is something that comes up in the next episode, when he loses control in his life, that he self-sabotages. That's how he reacts negatively to things. And this is another way, him skipping the audition is a way for him to self-sabotage out of fear. And I think Kurt recognizes that. I'm not a clean chipper. I had a huge issue with when Kurt joked about the cheating, but the fact that he...
That was weird. Go on, sorry.
But yeah, I think he's right in that Blaine was afraid, because Blaine tends to self-sabotage. He did when he cheated. That was self-sabotage because he thought the relationship was over. So I think the self-sabotage is very normal for him, and him being like, because I liked Operation when I was a child and I liked George Clooney.
I loved that. I totally loved that that line. The scene did feel very real, and I do agree with everything you're saying. I don't think that Blaine was, like, lying to Kurt in that scene. I feel like in the lead up to it, I believed him, and then, like, because I can imagine him being like, actually, I you know, want other things. But what ended up happening with the scene, I loved. Like, I loved Kurt being like, yes, because of all those important conversations we've had where you said you wanted to be a doctor. Like, I did love that. I hated Kurt saying, if you've cheated on me again, can't blame it on sex addiction. Though, I did find it interesting that seems like to be, like, it seemed to be casual enough that it may have been a topic that's been discussed in the past, and that's definitely something fandom has latched onto with Blaine, that his behaviour towards sex may have come from some sort of sexual issues, and that's... Mm. So I kind of liked that little bit, but...
Did we talk about that before? Did we discuss how... I know we just said with Brittany that molestation was something we assumed had happened in her childhood, but...
And then it turned out to be true.
Right, and then for Blaine, did we say the same?
A lot of people think that Blaine's behaviour towards sex, attention, and relationships does come from something like that. It's never been addressed, no, but a lot of people.
It was confirmed with Brittany? When was it confirmed with Brittany? I don't remember.
It was confirmed with Brittany in a script, basically, for the episode where she said about... The episode where they were talking about, like...
The alien abduction, the infamous alien...
Yeah,
I went on a rant for that time. I remember the alien abduction.
Yeah, there was an alternate script from that episode where Brittany spoke about that sincerely as opposed to making it a throwaway joke, but it was from that same scene, and it was meant to be, like, molestation or rape.
All right, well, let's move on.
Anyway,
We would be curious to hear what your thoughts are if you're listening about Clayne in this particular episode, and feel free to comment on hypeable.com's post for this podcast, episode 70. Let's move on from Clayne a little bit, because we have the whole next episode to even rehash, which is very Clayne-centric, more Blaine-centric than anything. But anyways, at the University of Cincinnati, Becky and Artie go to visit. Becky meets more people with Down syndrome, and it turns out there's a little guy that has a crush on Becky right away. And this is, like, a really cute scene, and I think it's very clear, I think, to me at this point that they're wrapping up Becky's sort of storyline. I don't know if you guys got that impression as well, but it seems like they would be writing her off of the show. Mitch, what were your thoughts about Becky making it to college and having a little boy crush?
Well, she deserves good because she's been scared for a while, and I think that she needs to be shown that there's a safe environment for her. But she doesn't deserve the easy out she's getting from the shooting situation, and I'm never going to forgive Glee for letting the viewer assume that what she did wasn't as serious as it was. And I think I'm tainted from Becky forevermore, not Becky herself, but from the way that she's being treated nowadays, and also how she's able to get away with treating people like they're complete utter pieces of trash, but have everyone blink at it, but then move on.
So confused by everything that they do with Becky, basically.
Natalie's summing it up right there. Exactly. I'm confused.
I really want to be sensitive to the situation.
Right. Yeah.
But I just don't get it in the sense of I don't get how flat out abusive she is. I don't get whether they're trying to make that a hilarious joke that someone with Down syndrome is constantly making overt disgusting sexual references, references that would be disgusting from anyone, not
right
her.
Exactly.
He's about to show me his purple head. I was like, are you kidding me? You can't say that to a person.
Don't say those words ever, anyone on this show ever say those words, because ew,
anyone in real life, that's horrible.
And what the guy who has the crush on her immediately as well is kind of overtly pushy, and I like that she kind of pushes him off as well, but I'm like, is this meant to be some sort of joke? And apparently Ryan Murphy has kind of a history of this with people with Down syndrome in the American Horror Story, and apparently in Nip Tuck as well has people with Down syndrome play these characters of really extreme aggressiveness or sexuality, and I'm like, I'm not sure.
I can attest for that. Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm not sure this is okay. I don't know, but I don't think this is okay. And I'm just, so the stuff with Becky, I like, some of her stuff with Sue. I like her having the conversation with Sue in the next episode, that they talk to each other one-on-one, normal people, and I think that, Sue is probably very used to that, with her sister and all of that. That's cool. That's fine. And I like that they don't always make Becky's story about, you have a disability issue, that's fine too. She's just normal and, says, and maybe she gets crushes on people or whatever. I don't like the overt aggressiveness or the gross sexuality that they put onto her.
Her treatment of Artie is the worst. Whenever I see her Artie on screen, I automatically cringe and I wonder why he's giving her the time of the day. I really do.
Yeah, and I just don't know, someone tells her, no, and I don't know if that kind of aggressive behavior is meant to be a natural kind of part of her, being stressed and scared or whatever. But it's so much that it's making me uncomfortable.
Well, I've noticed that when we talk about Becky and other people with handicaps or disabilities on the show, it always has a lot of reaction from our audience. So if you're listening and you have a particular thought about how Becky is portrayed on Glee, let us know what your thoughts are in the comments section, because we definitely read them, and I always like to see what people out there are thinking. And those are great points from everybody. Let's move on here. Sam meets with guest star Tyra Banks as...
Because she's the thing. Because she's here.
I know. I didn't even realize she was guest starring until she appeared on the screen.
Seriously, yeah.
She is a modeling agent for Bitchette Modeling, which is hilarious. And I love when Sam refers to her as Miss Bitchette. Anyways, he basically has the vacant stare of cows that's how she explains him. And she says that he needs to starve himself and lose 10 pounds, who Sam is already a very skinny person.
Seriously.
And this was a very interesting moment. I mean, this is the reality of the modeling industry from what I can tell. And, what were your guys' thoughts about this? Caitlin, what were your thoughts about Tyra Banks and the whole starving yourself to lose 10 pounds situation?
I mean, I loved the scene. I thought it was hilarious. And before the episode aired, she had there's a Glee video thing with her, and she was talking about how, she was playing a caricature and that they were having her say things she would never ever say to a model, on America's Next Top Model or something.
Right.
And I was just, loving how over the top she was. And she had said something like that she wanted to make sure she even looked completely opposite from herself. So they gave her like, this really angular haircut and really big makeup. So it seemed different from, so you wouldn't think that this is things that Tyra Banks does. So I liked that. And I just thought it was a great scene.
Yeah, from what little I know about Tyra Banks, she's actually very, like, you know, embedded with model rights and just always doing the right thing. So I think for her to play this part was very sort of completely opposite from who she at least presents herself as to the public eye.
I'm almost shocked that she took that role. And I think she did it, like you guys are saying, knowing exactly what it was going to sell as.
Yeah.
So it relates to something that I was just learning about in school of just the way that Africans Americans and blacks in general were just represented in American television, and that there were moments where I remember in this documentary, like the black actors would say something to the effect of, "No, I will not have myself representing the black community with an absent father or in such a buffoon-like way." And it's almost that's why it's funny to me that Tyra Banks would choose to represent the modeling community in a horrific way when she, you know, very audibly wants to demonstrate how the modeling industry doesn't have to be the horrible way that it is. I mean, America's Next Top Model is filled with that. It really is. So that's why it's funny to me that she wouldn't have taken that leap and said, "I can't be that horrible." Like, she didn't even have, like, a redeeming line to me. She was just a horrible character.
Oh, and I, like, she seemed to me totally delusional. Like, not horrible, but, like, there was kind of these moments of, like, between, like, very sharp, like, sincerity and total, like, space cadet, like,
yeah.
I don't know, just the switch was just, I found it really funny. Like, not evil, it's obviously meant to be portrayed in a negative light, which I liked.
Good point.
I think having her do it rather than her having the avenue to, like, as a famous kind of model and person in the model community, and her sort of having the platform to be like, "Lol, this is a parody," as opposed to getting some like unknown pretty lady to do it, and then, you know, they're not going to make their Glee's not going to make a video like with an unknown actress being like, "This isn't what we think of the modeling agency." But when they've got guest star Tyra Banks, she can then go and say, "This was hilarious because this isn't what it's like at all." If you know what I mean, like, and as opposed to them just saying, you know, having it more ambiguous and being like, "Oh, this is what it's really like, and we're not really going to address it." Like, I kind of liked that.
Yeah, and we, I think you guys hit it on the head there. I think it was a great way to sort of show the juxtaposition of who she actually is and what she was sort of caricaturing of herself. Back at the loft, Kurt, Blaine, Rachel, Sam, and Santana sing "Just the Way You Are," and I like this performance, and this is the first time Kurt, Blaine, Rachel, Sam, and Santana have sung together in a while. What were your guys' thoughts about it? I liked it. It was a fun little song.
Favorite performance that's pretty much ever been on Glee.
Oh, really? Why do you say that?
Don't know. Because everything about it was perfect. It was really natural. Like, it was like, there was no, like, extra music, like, coming out of the walls from nowhere. It was literally just that. it was very acoustic. I loved the scene beforehand with, like, Kurt teasing Santana. Everyone in it sounded really good together. Like, every line was done by, like, two people, and every, like, Sam and Rachel, like, Kurt and Blaine, Kurt and Sam, Santana and, like, Rachel, like, every pair that got a line together sounded perfect together. It was one of the few performances on Glee that's not, like, a performance at Nationals on stage that I felt like was, like, totally real, like, totally, would happen legitimately in real life, like sitting around having a sing along, and I just loved it. I don't know. And I love the song. I like it. I love that song. So,
Caitlin, what about you?
Okay, before I say what's probably going to get me shot, can we appreciate the fact that Blaine bought a piano as a thank you gift for him and Sam staying in the loft?
I know! He's so weird!
I don't even think I realized that.
So much.
Yeah, they were like, Santana was like, "Where did that come from?" And he was like, Blaine wanted to say thank you for having us stay there. And she's like, we've got no space for it. Where's it going to go? And Kurt's like, it's going to go right here. And
like, so great.
Oh. Oh, I completely missed that somehow.
Yeah, me too. I loved it.
That's amazing. Yeah. Go ahead, Caitlin, though. What were your thoughts about the performance?
I didn't love it. I think the song itself was fine, but I just was so distracted by the fact that Kurt was completely angled away from Blaine the entire time. Like, it was like he was barely making eye contact with him. And I'm just kind of sitting there thinking, you guys are engaged. You're in a, you know, private sphere with your friends. You could, Kurt, you could act like you actually like your fiance.
Yeah. I've thought that a lot too recently. I'm like, okay, guys, let's have a little bit more
love.
They've
hugged and they should have kissed a lot. And that's always been a thing for Clean. But like, they really did that in their own privacy this time. And I've never seen them hug each other in their own privacy.
I think it's like Darren as Blaine will turn on the hard eyes when he's looking at Kurt. Like, so Blaine looks very much in love with Kurt. But then Chris Colfer, I think it's just his acting choices. He looks very cool, like he's maybe tolerating Blaine at best, and that totally colors my view of them as a couple, and I have a hard time dealing with it.
He's very like that. That's why I felt like that is why I felt like earlier in the episode, like with that seeing them together, I'm like, so much of this, I'm like, I don't really understand what we're meant to be thinking here, because so much of this feels like Kurt being really, like, condescending of Blaine, if you know what I mean, as opposed to sort of appreciating, like, And you know, compassionate. Like, it felt condescending, not compassionate. And that's why I was like, is that actually what Blaine wants? But then I kind of, he reacted like it was what he wanted. So I was like, oh, okay, I'm kind of confused. But yeah, I just think Chris Colfer hates the ship. I think he hates what it's made Kurt into. And I think that he just can't, like, I think he's very mocking about it in the press. And I think he's so done with it. He hates the fans of, like, the people that are, like, really gross about Klain. He hates that it's transferred through to serious abuse towards him and Darren in terms of, like, I don't know how much you guys know about this. It's probably for the best that you don't, but, like, RPF shipping, like, actor shipping. People not only ship Darren and Chris together, but have, like, One Direction-level conspiracy theories about them really being a couple, and like Darren's girlfriend being a beard and Chris's boyfriend being a gay beard, that they have a secret real relationship when they're not really that close in real life.
Yeah,
they work together. They work together, but they're not like good friends.
And well, I was just thinking, not to interrupt you, Natalie, I just wanted to mention while we're on that topic is Glee, you know, they release these, like, little behind-the-scenes videos every once in a while, and there was a recent one where Chris and Darren were sitting, you know, on this made-up set, and they were asking each other questions, and I was like, they clearly, like, don't really know each other.
The interviewer in that video is Darren's girlfriend.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Like, or at least, the Fox Special Ops video of Darren and Chris together is done by Darren's girlfriend. And it's not like a secret. He didn't say anything about her like publicly for ages because she gets enough abuse as it is. But now it is very publicly spoke about in interviews and stuff like that. People hardcore abuse her. Will, Chris's boyfriend, Will, who is Chris's boyfriend, Mia, who is Darren's girlfriend, and Darren and Chris about like them secretly being together.
It's funny you said Darren and Chris. I was like, Darren and Chris, huh?
Yeah. Yes, you're definitely the first person in the world who's made that joke.
Yes, oh, I totally. God, guys, come on.
And, good job. Claps for me. Yeah, and I think it's really coloured, like, Darren's a very positive person, but Chris is a very cynical person, and I think it's really coloured his opinion of those
little extra behind the scenes or whatever, I was like, ugh, these two don't really have a great connection.
I don't think they even screen tested together, and I think that was a mistake, because I think Darren is a great addition to Glee, obviously, he's, you know, one of the lead characters now, but I don't think him and Chris have ever had fantastic chemistry, and I don't think that I think they had more in, like, the first few episodes before they were together than they've ever had since.
Yeah.
But, and that was when Blaine was playing that slightly kind of more serious,
right,
like, dominant role, as opposed to now he's, like, totally, like, subservient kind of role. Yeah. And, I mean, he's very dominant personality with others, but in his relationship, he's very, like, subservient.
Well, let us know what you think if you're listening about Darren and Chris, their on-screen chemistry. Do you agree with us? Do you disagree with us? I'd love to hear what you guys have to say. And then we'll finally wrap up this part of the episode. Will in the New Direction sing You May Be Right, which is another great Billy Joel song. I was like, whatever about this. I'm not a big, huge fan of when Will performs with New Directions, so I was just like rolling my eyes and like getting ready to probably do this podcast that didn't end up happening that night. But what are your thoughts about it, Mitch? Did you like it?
No, because it was Will. Are you kidding me? My mind went right back to Toxic. Toxic. Ugh.
Caitlin, did you like it?
I mean, I was kind of whatever about the number, but I've been noticing that more and more, like, the less relevant Will gets as the leader of the Glee Club, with, like, Blaine and Sam and Artie basically taking it over the way they did last season. Like, he seems like he's becoming more and more a part of the numbers. We see that in Puppet Master. There's more of him being part of the number while the students are leading, which I find really interesting. He just is having less and less power in that group, which I find really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Natalie, any last comments before we head into Puppet Master?
No. I kind of like Sam coming back and being like, showing him up and being like, you know, you didn't tell us that Billy Joel didn't go to college. Not that
it's
relevant. I don't know. It's just kind of like,
yeah.
And I kind of like Sue snapping at them all, being like, you know, you are all going to be failures. And the whole aspect of the episode, basically when she addressed Will at both the beginning of the episode and the end, that he kind of knew that she was right, in the sense of like he didn't want to crush their dreams, but the one thing that I vibed was that he kind of knew that, yeah, there weren't going to be like 16 like superstars to come out of like McKinley between like 2010 and 2013, like,
right,
that it wasn't actually going to be a thing, and he didn't actually believe in them. And yeah, I kind of vibed that, so I kind of found that interesting, but that was about it.
Very good. Okay, so that wraps up the rehash of Moving Out, the Billy Joel episode of Glee. And we're going to move right into the latest episode, Puppet Master. Hopefully you're still with us listening to this extra long episode, because we also have news at the very end, which we'll touch on once we're finished rehashing this episode. So we open with this episode with Blaine being insanely bossy and mean, and it's obviously somewhat of a throwback to when Rachel was sort of the bossy, mean one of the group. And Natalie, I come to you because I thought of you in this very first opening scene, and I was curious what your thoughts were to see Blaine sort of so in charge like this.
I get it. Like, I get kind of, I kind of like the opening scene in terms of everyone sort of coming in, you know, him coming in and everyone just messing around. Because that, like, feels like what that class would usually be like. I feel like
yeah,
that's actually, like, really realistic as to what a bunch of, like, teenagers would be like. But he's just so deluded. Like, he's just, his brain is just not in the same place as normal people's. And Rachel was the same. Like, what Caitlin said earlier about, like, him mirroring Rachel, she's right. Like, he's the same. Like, it's not that kind of, like, it's not conscious arrogance. It's completely unconscious, like, well, yeah, I know what I'm doing. Why wouldn't you listen to me? It's so presumptuous, and I find it hilarious. But I also find it really interesting because it's just something that, like, yeah, it's kind of something that people have been, like, tossing back and forth about Blaine for a really long time, and that, hasn't been full-on addressed yet. And I liked... Yeah. No, I kind of like that. And when he was like, I've won more show choir trophies than anyone here, I'm like, have you? Because, like, we've never seen before.
Yes. This.
And
he was,
like,
a sophomore when he came into McKinley, right?
Junior. He came to McKinley as a junior. As a sophomore, when he was a sophomore, we never saw him win with the Warblers.
But he won. And
we don't know whether in the year before that they were in a different district and winning, you know, a lot or something. But he was... we don't know when he came to Dalton after his old school. So I was like, are you crazy? Like, he does have a lot of trophies in his bedroom, but I don't know. So
I won them in middle school.
Yeah, I was just like, lol, okay, whatever. But yeah, he's just, my whole thing with Blaine is he's just so deluded, and it just makes me laugh. I don't know.
Yeah. In the next scene, Pamela Lansbury performed the Madonna song Into the Groove at a venue called Callbacks, which is not the greatest setting, apparently, to have your first big gig, but that's where they go. And I love this. A lot of people didn't like it, and they thought it was a bit too cheesy, but I really loved Into the Groove, and I really loved Adam Lambert on this particular performance. I thought his vocals lended themselves very well to this performance. Mitch, what were your thoughts?
I have a theory.
All right,
my theory
let's hear
is
it.
They didn't want to pay Demi Lovato for her guest starring role in this episode, so she sat back and played the piano.
No. She was she was there, and she was just playing the guitar because she's one of the actual musicians in the band.
Right, I'm okay with that. She was in the back behind everyone else. Didn't make sense to me. I thought if she was singing, she'd be up there with everyone else playing her guitar. I don't know. My theory goes on to later on that I was talking before about a missing character. She wasn't in the meeting that Kurt holds later. She just wasn't there. And I thought that was extremely odd.
Yes.
Right? Did everyone else notice that too, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's what I'm talking about. Like, I feel like they just shoved her in the back, and that kind of torqued me because...
it twerked you? Is that what you said?
Torque. It's like T-O-R-C-K-E-D. I don't know how to pronounce that. How to spell it. Anyways, long story short is I love Demi Lovato, and it's almost a good thing, because it seems like that's how they're going to extend how many episodes she's going to be on, technically, and that makes it so that potential should become a regular. I don't know. In the end of the day, though, don't waste her. Like, you're not going to just throw her in the background and assume that I don't notice that, and then not have her show up for the rest of the episode. That was garbage.
Okay, but what about the actual performance, Into the Groove? Did you like it?
It was fine. Yeah, I agree with Natalie that Adam Lambert was the highlight of that performance. And Rachel got, I'd almost say, a deserved back end of that performance. She didn't really do too much. She had a very low harmony that you could barely make out.
I feel like Rachel's heart isn't in Pamela Lansbury. No, I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, that's pretty obvious. I think that's supposed to be like something we're supposed to notice. I agree.
This in the recap, but they looked like S Club 7. I love that this is what the inside of Kurt's head looks like, because what I liked about it was that it wasn't like a realistic performance. It was what performances are like in Kurt's deluded mind.
Right.
And
right.
I loved that. So that was kind of cool. I think Adam Lambert looks way too old for the rest of them. Like, I love him.
Yeah.
But I don't
I love
understand
that, that meant... the recap. You said like, that he looked like the babysitter.
I don't know if he's meant to be their mature age student or like whatever, but he just doesn't look like their age to me.
Yeah.
And that's fine if he's not, but I don't know if he's meant to be or not. But yeah. I actually preferred the bit before that, before they actually went into the fantasy performance where they're kind of holding the meeting and Kurt gets the phone call from Blaine, and basically they're both having these problems where, like, no one, like, thinks that they're, like, the most important person in the universe. And I just found that hysterical. I can't remember if it's before or after the performance that Kurt actually calls him like a puppet master. He's like, oh, you know, it was just the way, Blaine was like, oh, maybe I was coming on strong, but like, what's wrong with that? Like, if I know what I'm doing. And Kurt's like, nothing, but remember at McKinley, everyone gets an equal say, so you don't want to look like you're being controlling or a puppet master. And two things about this were amazing to me. Number one, that Blaine like holds the phone away and like looks at it being like, are you freaking serious?
Yeah, which I've done before, by the way.
Kurt is the most controlling and most, like, manipulative person on the show. Like, he is the one who tries to, like, make people fit into little, like, roles.
Yeah.
Like, trying to orchestrate everything with Finn. Like, trying to make Blaine, like, be someone before Blaine was ready to be. Kurt is the ultimate puppet master in terms of, like, attitude.
Yeah.
And I love that Blaine's going, really? Like, are you seriously telling me off? But to me, it also didn't seem like Kurt was being like, now you're doing something wrong. To me, it seemed like Kurt was being like, the trick is when you're manipulating someone to not look like
him. Yeah, make them think it's their idea kind of deal.
That is what Kurt sounded like to me. And I was like, And maybe Blaine didn't get that, but I don't know if it was on purpose, but to me, that is how Kurt sounded when he was on that phone call. Kurt sounded like he was saying, like, we know we're both the shit. Sorry, I've sworn in this episode a couple of times.
That's all right.
We know we're both the shit.
Past the F-bombs that we've gotten through, Natalie, come on.
But the way to get around that is, and that's what, and maybe Blaine didn't pick up on that because he's not as conscious of his own manipulation as Kurt is, but to me, that's totally what it seemed like Kurt was doing, and I found it so funny.
I love that. Maybe Caitlin, what about you?
My favorite thing, though, in that phone call is that when Kurt says, like, you'll come across as a control freak, Blaine is checking his flawless hair and his bow tie. I was like, could you be any more anal? Like, that is the perfect visual. But I liked that they did the parallel between Kurt picking up his phone when he was in the middle of something to right before the breakup from the last season when he declined Blaine's call. So I thought that was a nice parallel.
All right, we'll get into more of that as we go on. In the next scene, Sue's being evaluated by the board as to be potentially the permanent principal at McKinley High School. Natalie, I loved what your little comment was in the recap, which was regarding Superintendent Harris. You said, quote, his spiel had all the trimmings of the I'm a late in life ex-married gay who isn't out, and I'm only going to talk in euphemisms, but let's hook up.
I was like, because they never specifically sort of go there. And usually when Glee's making a point, they hit you with it. And so I was like, I wasn't sure by the end of the episode. I'm like, was that just me? But to me, it was totally like he was hitting on her, but thought she was a man and was like a secret. Like, you know.
And in the end, when he was just like, no, I don't want to go out. Are you kidding me? You're a woman.
And the other guy like laughs. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is a thing. And I don't know. I just found it really funny. But
no, it's true.
I don't think Sue, like, or Jane Lynch is, like, mistakable as a man, though.
No. Like, no. I think that he was just supposed to be a complete ignoramus. But the other thing is, I don't understand how... I see your point, Natalie, of how he seems like he's a late-in-life ex-married gay who isn't out yet and is only going to talk in euphemisms, but let's hook up. I agree. But he also says, I want to hang out with you like men do, because that's what, and with buddies, because you're a man, right? So, like, he flirts with her at the same time, but then he also is like, I'm a bro who hangs out with bros.
It's because he's in Ohio. It's all part of the same thing, because he's in Ohio, and, like, basically, he is talking in euphemisms so that if gay man Sue is on the same page as him, he'll pick up on it.
Gay man Sue will pick up.
But if he's just a regular dude who would, like, potentially bash his face in with a tire iron for being gay, there's nothing...
Because that's regular. That's very... that's
that there's nothing he said that could be, like...
Right.
Didn't actually hit on him, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, what he said was completely the way that, like, gay men in the 50s would try and have sex, basically.
Yeah.
Like, exactly.
No,
and
it's
just,
true, yeah.
Like...
Yeah,
well, either way... Either way, Sue is horrified and is really taken aback, and she actually ends up talking to Becky, and we had mentioned that previously in this episode. Natalie, you said you liked that. She actually had a conversation. It was great. And Becky basically told her, you have, I forget exactly what the words were, an allure about you.
Yeah, allure that defies gender, or that trends, And I was just like, yeah. And she was like, that's what I've always thought, but like, blah, blah. I liked the exploration of like why she started looking the way she looks as well, because it was
right.
More serious and like more legitimate than like I expected. Like it was like the whole thing with like in the 80s and like respect, not having respect as an authority figure, and the guys like kind of teenage students like kind of sexually harassing her. Like they said something about and I was like, oh yeah, that kind of actually makes like a lot of sense, as opposed to it being some sort of convoluted crazy story like marrying herself.
That's
exactly
what I was gonna say, is this is a great example of like I think a great moment of writing on Glee, because it could have very easily, knowing how they've written Sue before, spiraled out of control into something absolutely ridiculous and we'd have Roxanne on here complaining about it. But instead it kind of makes sense, and it actually is probably something a lot of maybe women especially think about in their professional careers. Caitlin, what were your thoughts about this moment in the episode?
I mean, I agree with Natalie. I liked that she and Becky were just talking over ice cream. Like, that was very nice. But, I mean, I didn't have a lot of feelings about the storyline either way.
Yeah, I agree.
It was kind of there.
Yeah, it was just kind of there. Yeah. We'll move on. We have some more to explore with that. But in the next scene, Blaine complains to Brad about how he won't do anything if that's what the Glee Club wants. And in this This was a highlight in Natalie's recap, by the way. If you want to check it out on hypeable.com, she does a fantastic job recapping every episode and has them up very timely the next day. Anyway, before we move on to what happens whenever he sits down near the gas leak, Natalie, talk a little bit about your thoughts between the conversation between him and Brad, who Brad is actually going through a lot right now, but yeah, Blaine doesn't seem to...
Just phenomenal. Care. Number one, Brad Ellis, like the pianist, who his name really is Brad, is good friends with Darren Criss. Like, he's played for him at like private events and stuff.
Oh, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I'm really glad that like he was like because he's quite a well known like session musician, and like when Darren has done like performances at like charity events and hasn't been like playing piano himself, Brad has played with him quite a few times. And so I like that they got to do that together. But just he just walks in, and just this disembodied voice out of nowhere goes, "You're early," and just the way Blaine like jumps, and he's like, "Jesus, Brad, warn me before you talk." And it's just like that's the attitude that they like treat him with. Like that, it was just so well done. Like,
does he sound like this? "Well, you're early."
Oh, that was creepy. That was creepy.
He's done, like, they've done a few funny references before in, you know, about Brad, about him, like, kind of not talking, or about him, like, exploding and hating them all, or about people kind of treating him, like, literally, like, furniture and stuff like that, like, but this was just the fact that, you know, he's, like, warn me if we don't, like, the fact that it's, like, an ongoing thing, like, for them, I just found so funny.
I really liked what you said when you mentioned that somebody needs to give Blaine, or Darren Criss, a proper comedic role.
There was a couple of moments in this episode, let me tell you, actually, at the very start of the episode, when they're all yelling, and he leaves, and he's like, "Fine, if that's what you want, I'll just leave," grabs all his stuff, walks literally right outside the door, sits himself down, and like, and Kitty's like, "Well, someone's manstrating," and he's like, "I heard that." And the way that they did, like, I think it was the cinematography as well, because they did a very slightly shaky, like, docudrama style.
Like The Office.
This episode, and it, totally Office. And it worked so well. They should shoot all of Glee in that.
Yeah, they should.
So much funnier. And it worked so well. And there was a delivery he had later as well, like, I think when Tina finds him with the puppet, and he's like, "I'm not doing anything. What do you want?" His delivery in this was the best comedic work. He needs a full-on, like, Arrested Development style, like, Jesus, he's good.
Yeah.
And the whole Brad thing, like, him just being like, "Yeah, look, no one cares about me, and no one listens to me, Brad," and Brad's like, "I'm losing my house, I have a gambling addiction," and he's just like, oh, it's just Blaine, I just can't, he's just amazing. I need to hear Caitlin's thoughts on this scene, though.
Yeah, yeah, Caitlin, any thoughts on this particular moment?
I was dying. It was so funny. And I was just like, can we appreciate the fact that Brad has talked exactly twice, and once was to Blaine?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff. This was a very, very fun episode for Blaine. Well, he actually ends up sitting down in the back of the choir room and fades into a hallucination with puppets performing "You're My Best Friend." They all love Blaine and tell him everything that he wants to hear. And I'm a huge Will and Grace fan, and one of the seasons of like their blooper reels or highlights or something focused on this song. And every time I hear this song, I just have like the Will and Grace highlights reel going on in the back of my head. But I thought this was a really cute performance. I think before we started tonight's episode, we were all kind of talking, and Natalie and I, you and I both said that we sort of weren't really sure how we were going to like the puppet situation.
Like, is it going to be like, are they going to do, oh, Mr. Shrew's got a brilliant idea to be original at Nationals. We're all going to use puppets. Like, we had no idea how even the word like puppet master as a title for the episode, I was like, what is this?
Right, yeah.
As soon as it started getting into stuff with Blaine, I'm like, oh, okay, it literally all makes sense. Okay, it makes so much more sense than I ever thought it was going to.
Do you guys think it would be early to get a national storyline in here? Because as far in as we feel like we are, we're only at episode 7, And that is very early to be thinking about Nationals, because usually we're not thinking about Nationals until episode 19.
No, yeah. I think that they're going to have Nationals quite soon. And I think that they are going to probably spend the rest of the school year, like the graduation will also be quite soon, like probably in the first half of the season.
Really?
I reckon Nationals will be like episode like 12, and I reckon graduation will be like episode like 15 or 16.
Based on what? Why are you thinking that?
No, just timing. I don't know. I just think, like, I'm trying to think how much, like, space there is between now and then. Like, they've had, like, prom and all of that. Like, so that's going to be, like, April, May. I think it'll be soon. Maybe sooner than episode, like, and then I think the rest of it will be literally, like, summer and, like, maybe focused, like, a lot in New York. Maybe
I would hope so, yeah.
Like, I think it'll be, like...
Like, summer jobs. Oh, like High School Musical 2!
I have not seen High School Musical 2. I've only seen High School Musical 1 and High School Musical 3.
Oh, be like Saved by the Bell when they get jobs.
That would be amazing. Oh my god,
yeah.
Caitlin, what were your thoughts about the performance with the puppets?
Oh my god, this is the best thing ever. Like, oh my god, so great. Like, the fact that, like, we've had other hallucinations in the show, and they're all like, Brittany had like her sexy dance, and, and then Blaine hallucinates puppets. Like, you are a ray of sunshine. I love you so much.
It was so cute, and like you could tell like how stoked Darren was. He was just holding it in. Like, he was literally just holding in like the kind of like, oh, Blaine being happy that everyone loves him, to like Darren being like, I get to freaking sing with the freaking puppets made by Jim Henson! Like, kind of like, absolutely, just barely holding in, like, complete joy. But it was so funny, and it was so funny that that's, like, the inside of his head. Like, the inside of his head is not only, like, puppets, but, like, you know, that's what he wants. Because his reactions once he went into the fantasy were not controlling. Like, we're looking at the way that he sees himself, and in the way that, and you know, the way he was in the fantasy, he was so childlike, and he was like, really, you want me to, really, you guys like me, like, you want me to sing, like, and that's so Blaine, like, that he is, he doesn't realize how controlling he is, and because to him he's still really insecure, and like, more than anything ever, Blaine is like, he needs approval and attention, and he does not realize he's as arrogant and attention-seeking as he is. Yeah. And I loved this episode, this entire episode, because sometimes, you know, people get really drawn into Glee because there's so many characters, and, you know, there's not enough time to really spend with all the characters, but so many characters have these little aspects of their personality.
Like, quips,
And you kind of wonder, like, is that, like, meant to be, like, an ongoing personality trait and you've just never addressed it? Or is that just something, like, I'm construing and, like, building up the character to be who he is? And a lot of the stuff about Blaine has been like that for a long time. Like, people have a really clear idea of Blaine, but it's not, you know, it's based on little things. Like, people had really clear idea about Puck as well, and, like, Artie, like, all sorts of different characters that didn't necessarily get total, like, introspect into their head. And it's really impressive to me that Glee has been like, you know, to now know that all of those little things, you know, not necessarily setting up on purpose for this episode, but there's somewhere, there's a Blaine character spec that has all of these things, and it's like, play up all of these little aspects, because not necessarily, not like, oh, you're going to get an episode about it later, but like, these other things about Blaine, and that this attention-seeking, desperate neediness is actually a big part of him on purpose rather than something that fandom has construed. And I'm impressed. I'm really impressed that they addressed it.
Go Glee! In the next scene, Blaine tells Jake to check out something weird that's going on in the choir room and to sit in the back chair. In the choir room, Jake cuts off Shu and tells him that he's sort of over helping them dance when none of them really can. Marley has an amazing reaction where she sort of laughs and says, your dances are fine, but they're not epic. And Jake goes, oh, you want to see epic? And he basically goes into Nasty and a Rhythm Nation mashup by Janet Jackson. And I freaking loved this performance. I mean, Jake Jacob Artist as a performer has shown a lot on this on Glee, his dancing abilities, but I think this was just another level. I mean, it was just a really fantastic performance, and I love this song and or these songs, and this mashup was fantastic. I was just eating it up. I was like, yes, I think I watched it like 3 times in a row just because I love to see the dances. But Mitch, what were your thoughts about it? There were a lot of abs in this scene.
Oh, that moonlight ab look? Come on. There we go. That's like the classic like mommy porn romantic novel book cover. Like think about those romantic novels you always see in like the supermarket. It's exactly like that look. But like it worked because it wasn't like a 4-year-old man. It was like a 25-year-old man.
Uh-huh.
It was like it was legitimately sexy, and not just in an overtly sexual way, but in a stylistic way. That's what I was getting at. I wasn't saying in a grossly sexual way. Natalie, your reaction made it sound like I was. Anyways, I like the style of it is what I was getting at.
I see what you're saying, and also, I mean, the amount of talent that is just happening on the screen is just really insane to watch.
Oh my god, the dances though! Like I'm just saying, Marley. Yeah. You're knocking him down for nothing. He does have epic dance moves, and that's it. Done. Yeah. You don't have a point in there. I'm sorry.
I love when they would cut to the New Directions that were like behind the fence or whatever, and like everyone was like really excited to see what was happening, and Blaine had this big smile on his face the entire time.
Well, Marley and Bree are both pining, and Bree's hair's down, which makes her look so different and beautiful. I love.
Yeah, I liked hearing Bree sing a bit in this as well. Like I liked her having the Miss Jackson, if you're nasty line as well. It cut, like, I found it interesting that they, like, did the cut between Nasty and then, like, Rhythm Nation, and I'm like, is that just because you wanted to recreate the video, but you also wanted to use Nasty, because the video for Nasty is not so great, but the warehouse is an exact copy of the video from Rhythm Nation.
Just imagine the production behind that music video that they made for this mashup. That is beyond. That's, I can't think of too many other productions in Glee that I've sat back and said, they've really spent a lot of money and time putting that together. Like, there are little ones like that, but nothing to this epic proportion. It was an epic, epic music video, though. It blows my mind.
Caitlin, what were your thoughts?
Can Jacob Artist just be dancing all the time? Like, he's so phenomenal. Good. Oh my god.
He's so good.
I couldn't take my eyes off him. He was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Okay, we'll move on from that. Blaine makes a puppet of Kurt basically talks to it like it's normal to be talking to a puppet.
The art teacher.
Oh, yes.
The best thing Blaine has ever done. I could not deal with that scene. I'm sorry, it's so insignificant, but it was so funny. Like, just the way that he was like, instead of, could I make a puppet? Like, just his whole, like, weird shame about it, and, like, the way that she reacts to him. I just, make a puppet! And Brett, like, yarn bombing, like, Stoner Brett, who's, like, doing yarn bombing, like they do on Lamppost, but on a bomb, like, it is covered, and you couldn't tell that it was, because it was yarn bombed, and I'm just like, far out, this scene is why I love this show. That scene in the art class was just...
Totally.
So insignificant, but so funny, and I couldn't handle it. I made my roommates watch it. Like, I could not handle it.
Natalie, pick this bone with me right here. Blaine is pulling this, it's my senior year, blah, 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 crap, everywhere he goes. He didn't just do that in New Directions. He also does that in his art class. I don't know about you guys, but personally, I wouldn't, like, sit around and say, it's my senior year, so I deserve the whole wide world to love me and adore me and let me do whatever I want.
He doesn't realize what he's saying most of the time. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying that's an excuse. I'm just saying Blaine's arrogance and his manipulation, he's not conscious about it. He's completely deluded. Yeah. Like,
he realizes he probably has credits coming out of his ears from Dalton. Yeah. Like, he probably took all the advanced classes as soon as he got there. So he's like... He's literally filling his schedule with arts and crafts. Like, in Guilty Pleasures, he was sitting in the library reading Goosebumps in the middle of the day. Like, he probably doesn't have that much to do.
Guys, he's definitely a part of this time flux that Glee's continually in, because he made puppets, like, for everyone, ever, and some, like...
How long does it take to make a puppet? Like, wouldn't that take a long time?
Like, have you guys heard anything about the Avenue Q puppets? Those things were... gosh darn expensive.
And I'm kind of bummed that they did this episode and didn't do an Avenue Q
song. I know.
Don't even talk to me about how bummed you are, Natalie, because I am devastated.
I was really expecting something from Avenue Q. I was really surprised myself that they didn't do anything.
What could they do? Oh, they could do There's a Fine Line, I guess. That would have been cool for Marley.
Which, by the way, if you're listening to this episode and you haven't seen Avenue Q, find a theater and drive there and watch
Avenue
it.
Q together.
Yes, we did.
Oh, that's right. You did. Yeah. How cute. I forgot about that.
Yeah, it was...
Natalie, I'm still expecting you to write that article you said you were going to, finding all the references that Avenue Q makes to other Broadway shows, because we found two West Side Story ones.
Oh, did I? I have to watch it again. Okay, yeah.
Bootleg that. I want to see all the ones you come up with, because... No, but I'm saying either There's a Fine Line that Kate Monster sings, or Purpose. That would be really good, too, for any of these given characters. For Blaine, imagine if he did Purpose as opposed to You're My Best Friend. Like,
yeah,
just imagine him doing, gotta define my purpose, and then all the puppets are like, gotta find it!
Yeah.
Come on, that was a missed opportunity.
There's a lot that...
Only for now?
It's not a PG-rated show, so it's a bit difficult.
Right,
but
Purpose, I've heard, done very PG, because they say instead of smoking grass... They like, I don't know, they change that stuff around. And for now, Natalie, I know that you, as soon as Avenue Q ended,
you told me,
Mitchell, I don't know anything about Avenue Q before I go into this show. I said, all right, me either. And you come out and you say, the only thing I knew was For Now, it lived up to my expectations. I said, I agree.
For Now is actually a gorgeous song that I've heard.
Oh my God.
Referenced in, not in Glee, but I remember reading a really amazing... Glee fan fiction in which it was a song that was like they were messing around with, like, and I've like that Rachel taught them, and like that it was like the original I don't know, it was just like it was really cute and it worked. I feel like it's a song that like in realistic Glee world, if you know what I mean, like that would have been a song that they would have had fun messing around with, and it's very sort of uplifting, and I don't know. Avenue Q, puppets, whatever. Like, it's a very explicit show, so obviously there's not that much they can do.
Well, would you say that these puppets in this episode of Glee mimicked more of Avenue Q's, or something like the Muppets, or what?
They're more Sesame Street. So it's Muppets. It's Jim Henson-y, but the Muppets themselves didn't have that many human people. They are similar to the humans in the Muppets, but Sesame Street had more human-style characters than... It looks the way that, like, a Muppet looks when they're trying to make it look like a human, as opposed to, like, a monster. Yeah.
Can we talk skin tones with colors, too? Because that was interesting. I always found that interesting with how they do people of color or, I don't know, whatever. Like, so how someone is Asian is going to be represented. Is that, like... I don't know. I'm going to throw out a random color. Is blue always Asian, or does that change randomly? Like, I don't know how they assign colors.
But I was I wanted to also mention, last week was very Muppety for me, because this episode aired on Thursday, and so did Lady Gaga's Muppet Spectacular, which was amazing. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, go watch it on Hulu. It was like Muppets all day on Thursday for me.
Seriously.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on a little bit here. Sue goes to Will to ask how he can do pirouettes and still be somewhat masculine. Sue said, Will continues to tell her about Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire, which, in one of the most hilarious scenes, I think, of this whole season, Sue continues in every response to Will and says, she's like, what does this... I still don't know what this has to do with anything, and her facial expressions are just hilarious in this scene.
By the way,
yeah, like, she's right.
It's like she just—it's just like, how on earth is this going to help me at all?
So she's Will sort of tells her that Ginger Rogers was actually sort of leading Fred Astaire because she was doing everything backwards and in heels. Anyway, Sue sits in the crazy chair and hallucinates performing cheek to cheek with Will. And Caitlin, what were your thoughts about this performance? And we even got a little bit of vocal singing from Sue in this scene. But Caitlin, what were your thoughts?
It was fine. I mean, I just...
Not impressed.
I don't care about Sue's story, this line. I don't care when Will is involved, so it was there. I mean, I like when Jane Lynch gets to sing, so I was happy about that, and she looked lovely in the number.
Yeah, she did.
I mean, that was kind of about all I cared too. About.
Was she meant to have her longer hair, or was that just supposed to be
yeah,
the hair?
Yeah, her hair was really nice. I liked her hair a lot.
Yeah, it was good.
Natalie, what were your thoughts?
I mean, the number was cute. I really liked the song. I hate that Will gets to do these beautiful classic songs. I mean, not that there's anyone else around to do them, but I just want him to just not have any screen time. But I liked... The number was kind of cute, but, okay, I got some questions about... number one, the gas hallucinations. Before that, what I really loved about this scene, again, yeah, was Sue being like... literally, this has nothing to do with what I'm saying or anything at all. But then him kind of swaying her and being like, okay, I'll cut you a deal. You give me $600 for new costumes and I will teach you to dance like Ginger Rogers because that will solve your problems. And she's like, I'm not giving you more money for costumes. Until you explain to me where you got the 18 cubic foot air
Lady Gaga parachute.
And I loved that they did that. I don't know why. I love that Will was kind of like, fine, and I'm not going to explain myself, and walked off. I was like, do you have some sort of, like, secret sugar daddy who's, like, funding the Glee performances, but you're still trying to, like... Imagine, like, a villain...
Will probably
like,
does, actually. That's the thing.
Like, Caitlin, you're a Star Kid fan, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Imagine, like a twisted, like, style, like, Glee, in that, like, Will is this, like, super bad guy doing, like ridiculous, irresponsible, like, things with money and, like, with students and, like, that Sue or Figgins or whoever is the good guy trying to, like, you know, have some sort of measure of reality. Like, an episode from... Like, a legitimately done episode from that perspective. Because Twisted from Star Kid is basically the concept of, like, the musical Wicked where it's, you know, told from the sympathetic perspective of the Wicked Witch of the West and, like, how... that story could be flipped on its head, and they Twisted did a parody of that about Aladdin, where Jafar is the kind of this guy trying to get the country in order, and the Sultan is like all extravagant, and Aladdin is like a you know arrogant kind of thief who just
street rat.
Yeah, well, they're like he's the most able-bodied man in Agrabah. Why doesn't he just like get a job and actually like work? And like anyway, it's this. A twist like that, and I would find it really funny to see Glee kind of do that kind of thing, because where is Will getting the money for those Gaga performances? Why is he being all smug and silent about it when he's like, I need $600 more? And I find it, like, is he funding some sort of, like, money laundering ring? Like, I find it, like,
oh,
hilarious.
Please let this be, like, a Breaking Bad tie-in, please.
I find it hilarious. So, so I appreciated that whole thing more than the actual thing. But I like the storylines where Sue gets to be like a little bit vulnerable, like when she walked in and she's like, look, I have a crush on this guy, but this happens. Like, it'd take a lot to admit that to someone, and like, her and Will are friends at certain times. It just annoys me when they keep flip-flopping that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's I guess, nice that they are kind of still friends, even though things are quite bizarre right now.
Yeah, I thought that too in this moment. I was like, I kind of like this dynamic between the two of them right now. It's kind of working for me, so I like it. In the next scene, Bree admits that she's actually pregnant, which is what caused her sort of hysterics earlier in the episode. She just wants Jake to come to the doctor with her. And Natalie, you were mentioning also in your recap about how, oh great, another Puckerman baby. My initial reaction...
Is this going to be the same? Like, yeah.
Yeah, that was my initial reaction too. Mitch, what was your reaction?
Yeah, to the T, like cheerleader, come on.
Yeah.
But she was looking to get an abortion. She just said that straight up, and she said it in a very vulnerable line of, that's the right thing to do, isn't it? And I was like, oh my God, Bree, stop making me feel things that are positive towards you.
And I think we talked about on this episode or on Glee Chat before about we were wondering when they were going to hit this sort of abortion topic, because they've sort of hit every other mainstream controversy except this so far. Well, at least specifically.
They've had a lot, and to miss abortion was odd, because that's a very hot topic. Item for today.
Well, I think it's honestly, like, out of everything that they've done, like, it's, for some reason, such a, like, it's still seen as such a, you know, a bad thing with some people. Like, when they kind of said, oh, she's gonna get an abortion, the end result of that, of her being like, oh, actually not necessary, I was not surprised by that, because I do not think this show would actually show someone... Not in terms of, like, graphicness, but, like, I do not think that they would, like, be like, she successfully had an abortion. Like, I actually don't think Glee would do that. And whether I approve of that choice or not, I don't know. Like, I mean, not that I'm not pro-choice. That's not what I mean. But, like, I don't know whether they should or shouldn't show an abortion on Glee, but I feel like knowing Glee and knowing the kind of, like, values they attempt to have, but I do not think that they would show someone going through with it. Yeah. I kind of don't respect that. Like, I kind of don't respect them for that, but whatever. I don't know what you can do.
It seems weak in conviction that they're not willing to go to that extra mile, even though they say they are.
Yeah. Well, let's move on from that. We have one more little moment with that towards the end of the episode. Continue on with Blaine's crazy, which we've dissected a lot throughout this entire episode. He breaks into Sue's office and tries to steal Kurt's puppet, but Sue ends up catching him and gives him detention for a week. Blaine calls Kurt to tell him that he can't come to New York, and Kurt freaks out and says that it's absolutely insane that he has a puppet of him. Amongst other things, Pamela Lansbury goes on and performs their gig only to one person. Yeah, we can kind of keep going here because I feel like we've talked a lot about Blaine and his crazy. And
what about the crazy part where the Kurt Muppet literally came to life
and looked at Sue? Was weird. And like,
Chucky?
What I was more concerned about the whole delusions thing, like, obviously it sort of skips ahead to Blaine having his detention and then having delusions there of the puppets when it's, like, not even in the choir room anymore, and him kind of having that talk to them being, like, maybe the fact that I'm only truly myself with the, like, friends that I can control, like, means I have some sort of deeper, like, emotional issue and will never truly be close to anyone. And then the Jake pup is like, maybe you should tell everyone to stuff it because you're the most awesome. And it's just like, oh, honey, Blaine, it's terrible. But the delusions, okay, Blaine's delusions aside, is this meant to be an explanation for every, like, non-realistic, weird-ass performance we've ever seen in Glee? Is that Gaslight meant to have been there the whole time?
And that
every time someone drifts off to, like, singing in the hallways or, you know, having a giant snake or, like, something other than just standing in the choir room. Is it because they have been gassed? Like, is that actually meant to have been happening the entire time Glee?
Good point.
I thought Figgins did it. Like, because when Sue fixes it, it's literally just, like, unscrewed. So I thought Figgins did it just
I thought that as well, but I'm like, this would totally explain it if that's been happening the whole time. But, yeah, I think Figgins, by the end of the episode, I thought Figgins did it to get Sue in trouble, but. Anyway.
And you also have to think that, you know, we're going to see plenty more of those performances in future episodes. Yeah. So, yeah. Moving on. Go ahead.
Their phone call just for a second, because I had thoughts about this. Where they have that argument. And what's so interesting to me about this episode is because there's so much with Blaine and he's stressed and things are out of his control. And he tells the Kurt puppet before Sue takes it that he's forgiven himself, but he hasn't forgiven Kurt, which I think interesting. And then you get this phone call.
Did you feel like they were talking about, like, the cheating
as
well? Yeah, absolutely. Like, it said, it was like, oh, you know, I've forgiven myself, but, like, now I have, you know, but, you know, I've forgiven myself a long time ago, but, like, I have to forgive you for the way that you treated me as well. And he literally says, in this argument, I can't win because I don't have a leg to stand on about Kurt. Like, is that the way that he thinks and is that what he wants? Like, because, like, is that how stressed Kurt makes him? Because you guys shouldn't be getting married.
It's troubling that he's afraid to tell Kurt the fact that he can't come to New York on a school night on short notice to go to his gig, which is a really minor thing that, like, hello, you can't go to New York when you have school.
Yeah,
how is he going to feel safe telling these deeper issues he has to him if he's afraid of his reaction to that? And the fact that he can only tell it to the puppet whose reaction he can control is really troubling, and it just means that they still have really bad communication issues, which is what made them break up in the first place. And it just makes the engagement seem like a big band-aid that is starting to come off if this is going to be a thing. And Blaine needs to be able to feel comfortable telling these things to the real Kurt, and he obviously doesn't.
Well, it's very clear that they have some serious communication issues happening even still. It's interesting to me that they're engaged in living in opposite cities like that. I mean, it's almost like Glee is setting them up for a failure in that way. But
I just yeah, I just found that whole thing, like, yeah, like, Sue and her, like, you know, you guys, you know, have your magic bullet train or discount airline. That you take. It's true. Like, why was it so early? I mean, yes, it's a big deal, I guess, like, for Kurt. But, like, why would, like, that he's playing this gig, but he has, like, friends. Like, why would it be that big deal? And it is a lot of, like, in sort of inappropriate, like, pressure. He can't just go running off there. And, yeah, but the fact that he just sort of didn't call him in advance is bad. But how scared he must be. And intimidated, sort of, and you know, it is that kind of self-destruct thing of like, oh, maybe I can like just like not deal with this until, and now I have just not dealt with it, and it has actually become a problem. If you know what I mean, like,
And
I think that the engagement is kind of like what you said, like a Band-Aid or like something.
Yeah, I like that analogy.
Keep like tying, you know, to keep them tied together, even like. You know, oh, well, we've got this thing that we've committed to, even though that we're apart. Like, I don't think that they would be getting engaged if they were living in the same place. And I don't know, I just, I don't know, it's definitely cracking again, so I'm kind of interested in that.
The way I've been sad for Jake, I'm sad for Blaine, even though this is kind of a cracky episode. There were a lot of things that just made me sad for him.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. It's going to unfold, I think, in a very sort of climactic way with these two, as it does.
The puppet psyche thing is just, I could not believe the image. It was like someone was like reading like a meta post. I could not believe the stuff they were having him say with the puppets. I was just like punching the air. But yeah, it is sad.
Moving on, Sue, after a makeover from Unique, showed her softer side and showed the school board around McKinley. They offer Sue the permanent position, and afterwards, she's so excited, she asks Harris, Superintendent Harris, out on a date. He is absolutely appalled and says no, and she's sort of standing there like she can't believe it. They don't really go back to this too much with throughout the rest of the episode. This sort of happens towards the end, but I was really surprised that Sue, in all of this, who, yes, she's very irrational all the time, but you would think she would know a little better than to do something like that in that moment. And I don't know. Mitch, what were your thoughts about this moment?
Oh, sorry. We're talking about the makeover, right?
We're talking about when Sue...
Yeah, when she's had the makeover and he realizes that she's a woman and... I loved that little bit.
I'm just more interested in the fact that Unique was so willing to do a makeover for Sue, who had just been giving her such a hard time for using the wrong bathroom. And she was like, oh, honey, I have you set up. And she was just like, there you go. And I thought that we've already covered
everything about
the superintendent storyline, but that was the most unique part about that point.
Yeah, it was interesting. I don't know. Sue was sort of... really surprised by Harris's rejection of her, but
She looked pretty. I liked what she had going on.
Yeah, she was nice.
Yeah, but I think that it's just like Natalie said, a bit odd that Glee wouldn't punch us in the face with, oh, he was a gay superintendent all this time and was hitting on what he thought was a man, but they literally just left that up to our assumption, which I was like, oh, Glee. I didn't know that you wouldn't like hit the head on the nail really hard with that. It's funny. Yeah.
Moving on, Jake did some soul searching and pleads for forgiveness from Marley, saying that he wants to change his ways and she is the only one that could help him with that. She basically says thanks, but no thanks. This was the one part I wanted to mention. I had mentioned earlier in the episode I wanted to talk about a scene. And this was the first time so far this season that I actually cared about Jake and Marley. And I hate to say that because I think they're a great couple and I'm sure a lot of people like them, but I'm just like I mentioned about Rachel and Finn, for a long time I just really did not care at all about their storyline, and then I became super interested in it. But seeing Jake sort of teary-eyed and pleading for forgiveness and really seem to sort of be bearing his soul to her in this one scene, and you can kind of see Marley sort of realize that he's doing it, but still tries to hold her ground. I thought it was really great acting and a really great story for him. And, you know, she's like, no, you had your chance and you effed it up and I'm going to move on, and walks away. And I actually felt really sad for him. I was like, oh, this poor guy, he's like trying to change his ways. And, you know, people get to that point, and maybe it is a good thing to forgive sometimes. What were your thoughts, Natalie?
You can kind of tell the difference between, like, between him being like, hey, like, I'm sorry, like, just genuinely apologizing in
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like with the whole Bree thing and her telling him, you know, what she did, like being like, this is always going to happen to you because you're so, you know, right. You act so terribly unless you change, you know, this is going to be your life. It's kind of like that sort of kicks him in the crotch, and like the way that he approaches Marley after that is so different. I don't think he was being insincere when he was asking for her forgiveness before, but it's like he didn't realize just how bad things were until stuff with Bree happened.
Right.
And then once he did, it just came from a whole other place of like, yeah. I really need to not be like this. And he thinks that Marley is the only one that gives him like that makes him actually feel like acting differently and restraining himself or whatever. And I mean, I'm not too surprised that she rejected him. She doesn't know like the whole story, and also she may not still feel about him. I mean, I think she does. Like, I think she just thinks she's like holding her ground, but.
Well, I also think that this is an interesting sort of turning point for Jake, because I'm like, is this all sort of building to some sort of like, you know, boiling point with Jake? Like, is he going to break down? Is he going to freak out, do something even more irrational? It seems like they're sort of building this storyline with him where he's going to start getting really sort of impatient with this whole scenario. I don't know. It just feels that way to me personally, but maybe I'm reading too much into it. Moving on here, Kurt brings Cronuts back to the loft to announce that the second gig was booked, and it's at Williamsburg Music Hall. And for those who don't know, that's a very famous and reputable music hall here in New York City. And I want to point out, I mentioned this on Twitter, and I retweeted it from the Glee Chat account.
It's gonna be about Cronuts.
Yes, last week was the first night. We had Cronuts here. They were selling them specifically to NBC employees, and I got to have my very first Cronut. And for those of you who don't know, a Cronut is basically, if you think of a croissant and a donut mixed together, it was literally, and by the way, they are all the rage here in New York City. People get up at the crack of dawn to go get in line to purchase one. Like, they are a very serious, huge thing happening in New York City right
now. So weird.
It is very weird. And, you know, they were selling them to NBC employees here last Monday, and they were selling them at 3:00, and a couple of employees, my coworkers and I, went down to where they were selling them here in 30 Rock at like 2:30, and there was at least 300 people in line to get one. That's how crazy massive these Cronuts are here in New York City.
It's almost like when Krispy Kreme first started all over.
Yes,
again.
Exactly. It's very similar to that. So, I had my first one last week, and when I saw this happen on Glee, I was like, okay, this is getting a little bit weird now. I've said this before about how Glee and my life kind of parallel each other in a lot of different ways, but it was just crazy that they brought Cronuts onto the show finally as part of a New York City sort of happening. The same week, I just happened to have my first Cronut. By the way, Cronuts are amazing.
Really? Are they really that good?
Oh my god, they are so good. They're probably the worst possible thing you could ever eat and put into your body, but they are seriously so delicious.
I'm not gonna lie, like, as soon as you said the word Corona, I started daydreaming about eating food, and I missed your explanation of it. Can you do it again? Because I'm really craving it right now.
Well, Corona is basically a croissant with... Picture the best parts of a croissant, which are the flakiness, the texture, you know, that whole thing, mixed with a donut, which are the sweetness and the sort of sugary parts of the donut that mash
so
into
like
the
donut.
Pastry. Yeah, it's shaped very similar to
but
a donut.
But it has the texture of a croissant.
Yeah. Look it up. Google it. It's really good.
I know what it is. I literally can't imagine what it would feel like in my mouth. Like, yeah. I literally cannot...
Oh my god, it's so good. And these Cronuts, I don't know if every Cronut is sold the same way, but the flavor was sort of dolce de leche, so it had like this sort of like icing and caramel on top. Oh my god, it was so good. But yeah, so Cronuts for everybody. They got a second gig at Williamsburg Music Hall after the one person who showed up to their previous gig happened to send a bootleg to his son or nephew who works at Williamsburg Music Hall, and that's their next big gig. So we'll be excited to see what Pamela Lansbury performs next. And finally, in the very last scene, Blaine sends everyone puppets of themselves as an apology for not being able to come to New York to see their performance. And for some reason, they all sing What Does the Fox Say, which I absolutely hate this song. I cannot believe that the masses of this planet have seemed to latch onto it and turn it into some sort of hit. But nevertheless, both New York City and the McKinley High School New Directions performed it. And there was no really apparent reason. It had no fit into the entire episode. And I was just like, whatever about it. Caitlin, what were your thoughts about it?
Okay. I loved it.
Okay.
I
We've been
it
opposite
actually,
tonight, so that makes sense. That's okay.
Weirdly, it fits because like it's literally like communication issues. And Blaine is dressed as the horse who can't communicate with anybody. And he's also off in the woods that no one can talk to him. So, like,
oh my God,
it's weirdly fitting.
So deep.
Caitlin, wow. You've really looked into... You are a really good...
You should be on this show every week. This is
permanently,
super
yes.
analytical.
I mean, wow.
I would be so impressed if that's purposeful.
Yeah,
I would be so impressed.
I thought it was kind of weirdly fitting in a way that you wouldn't expect it to be.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. That's a really great sort of perspective on it. Any other thoughts, Mitch? Any thoughts on this performance?
Yeah, I didn't like it until Caitlin said that, but now I'm blown away.
Yeah, I know. I kind of want to go watch it again and be like, ooh, what do these animals mean?
Fox says who? What are these? I don't even know the lyrics. Fox doesn't say anything. I can't see what the fox says.
I know what foxes say because I have a fox. So... Really,
wait,
really.
Do you really?
What does a fox say? Please tell me.
Wait a minute. Natalie, wait, before we move on, you actually own a fox?
Yes.
Why didn't I know that about you?
I don't know. It's been for about, we had fox cubs a couple of years, for about a year, two little boy fox cubs that now are on, like, in, sort of enclosures, like one is at like a wildlife park and one has a big enclosure, and we now foster one. Basically, foxes are introduced in Australia. This is just very, very quickly.
Yeah, sure.
Foxes are introduced in Australia, like they're like not native at all, obviously, and they're considered somewhat of a pest here, as opposed to in Europe. They're obviously a predator in Europe, and like people shoot them for getting into your chickens or whatever, and it's very nasty, but they're not like, that's a vermin, like a rat. Like they're like, it's a wild animal. In Australia, they are a vermin, considered by people to be a complete vermin.
Like a rat?
Not like, it's not like they look like a rat, but they're considered to be a pest, a complete, like, because
raccoon.
We have so many, because we have so many native, no, less than a raccoon, more like a
neighborhood like cat?
No, like a pigeon or a rat in terms of vermin. They're not as common as that, but because we are like have so much native species here. Anyway, the point is they are they were introduced here by the British because they wanted to do hunting, and now they're vermin. And people who, you know, farmers and stuff, you know, they are basically killed on sight and stuff like that. But there's like foxes are very easily tameable if you raise them from. Babies, basically. They're more like a cat than a dog, but they are very, very tameable. And there's someone who we know who basically has a charity that takes like kits, like babies that are found on farms, like house trains them and raises them into pets, either for people who like want to adopt one or for like wildlife parks, very domesticated. And we have one that was given to the charity by some people that had to move. They had a fox, not part of the charity. They've had her for like 8 years. They just found her and kept her. And they had to move to a state where it's not legal to keep them. Like in the state where I live, it's technically legal. It's not, if you find one, you can keep it as long as you don't release it back into the wild. Other places, it's not legal to keep them at all. Anyway, we've got her because she's completely like she's like a house pet. Like she's a bit, she chews leather, but that's
well,
it. Like she's like
you should take a picture of it and post it on our Glee Chat Instagram account because that's fascinating.
I've got so many pictures of her. But anyway, what the fox says is basically this. She goes, ee! When she sees you, she rolls over onto her back and she goes and shakes until you pat her.
That sounds like a Vulpix.
Pardon?
The Pokemon Vulpix.
Do they make that noise?
Yeah, like
that's pretty accurate. if you listen to the latest,
that's like a fox Pokemon. That's funny.
We had, I put her on the last episode of Teen Wolf that we did, podcast, because there's going to be Fox, like, the Kitsune, which is, like, the Japanese, like, fox myth, is going to be part of next season Teen Wolf.
Oh, yeah.
And they talked about the episode, like, what does the fox say and all of that, and so in the bloopers I took a recording of, like, her making noise and put it in there, so if you want to go that, you can see what my fox
says. I actually really need to see that now.
That is amazing.
I will. Maybe I can make an Instagram video of her. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Please do. With her rolling down her back, like as soon as you walk in the door, I'd love that.
Yeah, I'll try. That's so she's cute. She's called Roxy, so not like Roxanne.
Right.
Yeah, we Roxanne obviously does not like being Roxy, but the fox is called Roxy. Anyway,
she's not like Roxy.
That's fantastic news, and we'll look forward to that on the Glee Chat Twitter account or Instagram account, which is if you're not following us, we're Glee Chat, all one word, on Instagram. And that wraps up a very long episode of Glee Chat, and hopefully you've listened from start to finish and are okay with us sort of catching up on two episodes that we kind of missed out on due to scheduling differences. We aren't going to get to the news today, but let me just recap it really quickly. And if you want to check out those details, you can head over to hypeable.com, mouse over the TV section of our of the site, and you'll go to Glee and find all of this information. Glee is moving to Tuesdays again in 2014, so when we return after the fall hiatus, you can start looking for Glee on Tuesday nights. Also, Amber Riley won Dancing with the Stars here in the U.S., which is a pretty big deal. So congratulations to her. She was very emotional and excited to win, and you can check out that video on YouTube as well. Also, Glee is doing a special fan voting situation with the 100th episode where fans can vote on one of 25 different songs to be remixed and re-recorded by the current cast, and these date back to all the way back to season one, which includes songs like Bust the Windows Out Your Car and things like that. So check out all of those details on hypeable.com if you would like to check those out and vote on that 100th episode remix. We'll probably go into more details on that particular story on our next episode, because I feel like we will definitely want to talk about what songs we would like to see remixed coming up. And also, don't forget to check out Natalie's amazing recaps on hypeable.com. She usually has them up the very next day. They're lengthy, but worth it, if you ask me.
Worth it.
So worth it.
Natalie, did I ever tell you how I enjoy them? I make my computer read them to me in like a robotic voice, and it makes it so ironic because there's so much personality in them.
You would, oh man.
But it's like, then Blaine calls Kurt on the phone, and he tells him about his day. What a hot mess.
I feel like that is...
She can't even. She can't even.
She can't even get it together. Natalie, I was thinking it would be hilarious if you like recorded your voice and like put it as a podcast.
Please, Natalie.
Or on that recap, that would be so funny to me because I can just hear your voice and when I'm reading that.
Maybe for the Christmas episode, maybe I could do that.
Yeah.
I know that one might be a little bit late, so I could, like, not, like, days and days, but it might be that evening rather than that morning because I'm going to be away during the day, like, when Glee airs, so I won't be able to start it straight away. So I'll talk to you and Andrew about that anyway, but perhaps we'll do something fun with it and do an audio recording.
Oh, please do. I'd love that to death.
Be so funny. All right, that is it for episode 70 of Hypeable's Glee Chat. Thank you, Caitlin, for joining us tonight.
Yay!
You
are fantastic.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. You're welcome onto the show anytime. I think you've really proven your analytical skills on our show tonight.
I'm so impressed with Blaine and the horse.
Yes, I know.
The horse thing got me. That was pretty amazing.
Amazed. You've blown my mind.
So good. And we will be back with another episode after this week's Christmas episode, which, by the way, is the last episode before their sort of fall/winter hiatus. So we will have an episode for you this weekend. So get caught up and enjoy former episodes of Glee Chat. And that's it for us. So everyone say goodbye. Thanks again, Caitlin.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Have a good week.
Adios.
Hey, Glee Chat fans. Are you obsessed with baked goods and delicious holiday treats like I am? Then you need to check out Hester and Pearl, a mother-daughter home baking business from Long Island, New York. They have an amazing array of delicious baked goods that you can purchase and have delivered right to your doorstep this holiday season. And Glee Chat listeners get a special discount. Use promo code GLEECHAT at checkout now through January 1st for 15% off of your order. Head to HesterandPearl.com/shop to check out all the goodies. That's HesterandPearl. I've had the raspberry almond bars, and I'm not kidding, they're so good. I actually asked if I could promote them on Glee Chat because I want all my Glee Chat listeners to be enjoying their amazing food while they listen to us on the show. And don't forget to like them on Facebook as well at Facebook.com/HesterandPearl.
Did you guys pick up the people screaming in Spanish before? They were screaming the same phrase. It was like 10 words. And they were saying it like musically, but it wasn't a song. It was like, El pollo, mierda. Like they were just going at it. And they just kept them like.
The chicken is dead?
Their...
What?
And they kept them, I don't know. They kept them like increasing their pitch. And, like, it was almost like, the British are coming, the British are coming, the British are coming, the British are coming. I was like, what is going on?
Mitch, I think that was all in your head, my friend.
It was so, I'm so glad you guys didn't hear that, because it was, like, obnoxious.
Cut to a headline tomorrow. Mitch Clow is insane, declared officially insane.
Fading on a boy who's lost all his brains.